Hello, everybody. I'm going to move that House File 797 as amended here with what you got yesterday. Members be recommended to pass and re-refer to Representative Murphy's Committee on Education and Workforce
finance,
whatever it is, okay? And with that, I will entertain questions from members of the committee or amendments from members on the committee. Representative Horton.
Mr. Chair, I forgot my bill and my spreadsheet. I'm going to go get that. But I don't know the precise number of the millions of dollars of tuition relief that you provided for the students of Minsky and the University of Minnesota. And just on behalf of the students, I brought you an apple today because I thought that you deserved it for what you did for tuition relief in the state of Minnesota. And I'm really thrilled with the work that you put in to put that tuition relief in this bill. So thank you.
Well, I want to, you know, I guess we have to thank the leadership of the House for giving me the amount of target that they gave me, because I begged and kicked and threatened a little bit, you know, in a good way, like I can occasionally do. But I also want to thank all the members of this committee on both sides, because I think we all realized when we heard testimony for the first month in this committee that there's a huge problem out there for the students, and I don't care if they're, you know, 18 years old or 38 years old, there's a problem, and we all heard that problem, and I want to thank the students, actually, and the student organizations for their involvement in this process. I think, and I want to thank the committee for being kind to me in my new position as chair of this higher education committee, because you know, it was a new experience for me. I haven't been on the higher education committee, I think, since 1992. So I kind of went out there on a limb on my own by starting to talk to the students, and I thought it was the right thing to do, because that's why a lot of people in this room have jobs. And I also really want to thank the administrations and the bureaucrats and everybody else too for being patient with me, because I think I made you a little nervous, and while that may have been my initial intent, I think as the process went, it worked to everybody's benefit. So with that, members, questions on the bill, comments on the bill, or amendments to the bill? Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. After being the chairman of part of this committee for a while, I was chairman, you have a much better ability to bargain than I did. You know, when I bargained, it went backwards. And I really would like to keep you in mind if I ever need a business manager. Is that right?
Well, I'm good at managing other people's money, but not my own.
Well, if I ever get any money, I'll call you.
Yeah. So, are there no amendments to the bill, Representative Poppy?
I have maybe a couple of questions that would relate to...
Go ahead.
Okay. I'm just on... Just to start out, I guess, on page 11, talking about the maximum number of semester credits for a baccalaureate degree or semester credits for an associate degree. I just had a question, I guess I wanted to know from someone, probably from Minsky maybe, or if there's, this is just going, right now we have 128 degree baccalaureate and 64 degree associate degree, and so I think it's a good cost savings for students, but I did have some questions about how that actually would be done.
Representative Poppy, we'll see if someone from Minsky wants to come down and comment on that. Is this gentleman coming down to comment on that? Okay. Welcome to the committee, sir, and just identify yourself for the tape.
Good
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Poppy, I'm Mike Lopez, Associate Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs with the Office of the Chancellor of State Colleges and Universities.
Welcome.
We haven't had a chance to do a thorough analysis of this provision. We do have one university in our system that has taken a close look at degree requirements for baccalaureate degrees, Minnesota State University Moorhead, and they've taken action to reduce the number of credits for most of their baccalaureate degrees to 120 credits. Some of them, they were not able to do so, it's my understanding, because of accreditation requirements and other things. So the if this provision were to become law, obviously the board would comply, would take action at each individual institution to look at their curriculum, modify the requirements, because those are established at each institution.
Well, my understanding, members, in putting this in there is that I thought it was St. Cloud State also served besides Moorhead, but maybe I got a little misinformation. Also, at the University of Minnesota, I don't believe I see Mr. Fitzenritter up there, and others, is at 120 or it's equivalent, and many of the private colleges in the state are so.
Can I just ask a follow-up then? So, Mr. Lopez, are you saying there is this would not impact accreditation, and this is more the national standard of, I guess I just always assumed it was more 64 and 128, so could you just follow up on that?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Poppy, it would be possible for most of the baccalaureate degree programs to be moved to 120 credits. But again, it's my understanding that for example, in some specialized programs, possibly engineering, possibly some others, it is a requirement that the program does take more than 120 credits to complete.
Well, members, the reason I did this, again, after listening to students, and on a two-year program, it saves the average student around $500, and on the four-year, up to $1,500. And that could happen soon. And if there is a problem with certain programs, like engineering or whatever, perhaps then, as I see examples of that, Representative Poppy, we can get some language that might address those specific things. Other than that, is Minsky opposed to this?
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe that we are opposed to the to the language.
Thank you.
Sometimes I shouldn't ask a question when I don't know the answer, but thank you. Representative Fly.
Well, how are you doing it?
I have a brief oral amendment I wanted to offer, but I wanted to also thank you for your work on the bill, and it is a good bill. I'm very pleased with it. I talked to Mr. Gelman about this at the end of the committee yesterday. And this is on page 14, line 18. And that would be to add the words Minnesota Institute for Sustainable Agriculture, in that line, alternative livestock research and outreach at Minnesota Institute for Sustainable Agriculture, which was the language in the bill that I brought. I just wanted to make sure that was designated.
So after outreach, we're writing at the Minnesota Institute for
Sustainable Agriculture.
Sustainable Agriculture. Ms. Nowak, do you have that amendment? And does everybody... understand that simple amendment? Any questions on the amendment? Not all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. You know, it would probably be time for me right now at this point just to thank Ms. Novak for putting in long, hard hours, Ms. Mm-hmm. Scott, Mr. Gelman, who one night slept overnight here. He didn't look too good in the morning, but he did get to go home and shower before we came back to work, and Mr. Berg, who have been working really long and hard in the revisor's office, that does such a good job trying to put these bills together. So, Representative Haas.
Thank you very much. I had a written amendment, but I think it's flying around someplace, so now it's an oral amendment. But on page 2, 2.4, I would propose the amount of dollars in the Minnesota GI Bill to $10 million and $10 million. The original request was $15 million for everybody in the know. The Senate side is $5 million, and so that'll give you a conference committee a little bit wider on negotiation to keep that. What I'm afraid of is if we don't have a substantial amount of money, people will be standing in line, and we will be upsetting veterans as well as making the ones that were first happy. So I suggest at least now.
I think we have an actual amendment with a number on it, if you want to offer that. And I see some students, and I think President Bruning is in the room over there. So welcome to the committee, and we're glad to taking care of you, we think. So welcome to the committee. Yeah. Representative Haas offers the A2 amendment.
And Mr. Chair, I'd also like to thank you for this bill, and especially keeping the tuition down to 2%, 2%. College, by the way, was the best 6 years of my life, so I...
at a time when everybody graduated in three, right?
And I went summers on the fast track.
Well, you know, I tried to put as much money as I could into helping everybody in this bill, all of the students, and trying to meet the demands of the systems, one of which said that, you know, if we didn't come close to their request, tuition would go up. I think the bill also is kind to the private college students, but are we okay? I think I kept a little bit of money. I mean, I don't know if we're going to use even the $7 million a year, and I guess we'll see what's going to happen both to you and Representative Davidson, but we'll see what happens. We're going to see what happens with this program. I honestly think it's the responsibility of the federal government to take care of our GI like they have since this program was instituted after the rebellion of World War I and helped the soldiers that came home from World War II. And now with all the other issues we have where we're keeping wounded people alive because of medical and technological advances, we're going to have a lot more to worry about than people going to school, because we have 30,000, from what I understand, injured veterans already from this war that are going to be needing a lot of help over their lifetime, and maybe this is a part of that help. But we've got a little bit extra money in order to help out with this program, which now is twice the program that the Senate has. I will say go ahead, members, and do what you want to do. All those in favor of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Other amendments?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney, did you have an amendment or a comment?
Oh, no, I have. There was an amendment in the packet.
Okay. Representative Mahoney offers the following amendment. Representative Mahoney, I'm being told that your amendment is to the wrong bill. So
it's the wrong bill, but it is on. It would fit in on page 31. So I don't know how we should have to do this.
We will have counsel change the amendment because it's too long of an oral amendment to accommodate.
Mr. Chair, some of us don't have that amendment.
The A070628 amendment, which is supposed to be in the package.
Correct, we got that one.
Okay, also, can you tell us what page we're on, Representative Mahoney?
I'll let counsel.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mahoney, the language on page 31 is slightly different than the bill that this is amending, but we could still put this put lines 1.3 to 1.5 in. This subdivision here doesn't set a size for the council, so we don't have to adjust that.
Could I suggest perhaps that
we could work on this and bring
work
it back?
On this and
I can do it.
Oh, can we do it now? Okay.
Let's see, page 31, line 25, after the colon, inserts the language on page 1, line 3 to page 1, line 5.
So, counsel, to make this clear to the committee, are we amending the 0628 amendment, written amendment to say
yes.
that new language?
Yes.
Okay.
And delete line 1.2.
Okay, so then it fits in the bill.
Mm-hmm.
Any
correct.
Questions on this amendment or what it does or how it's fitting in the bill now?
I can explain it
really quickly.
This particular part of the amendment creates a program that the mechanical contractors and the national electrical contractors pay half of. They didn't have any representation on the board and how that any kind of spending or decisions were going to be made. All vested interests have been talked to and are okay with it, as to the best of my knowledge. And so it's just an agreement amongst stakeholders to make sure everyone has a say in how this program moves forward.
Members, remember this was Representative Nelson's bill with the contractors supporting it. Okay, we have the 0628 amendment as amended for front of us. All in favor, then signify by saying aye.
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 Motion prevails. Amendments. Representative Poppy.
On page 14, I have an oral amendment.
Page 14.
On line 32, to insert the words plant and after utilizing and before livestock. So it's the line would say diseases utilizing plant and livestock cells.
Okay.
That was in the Ag Specials bill as we talked about it originally with Representative Welty, and I thought that it was going to be amended, but it apparently didn't get amended, so I just want to put that
You've heard the oral amendment. Any questions on it? Comments? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Amendments. Do I have to move my amendment? I have my amendment coming, which corrects a number of errors in that in the bill. So, do we have any other amendments? Gunther.
I can move to A4, Mr. Chairman.
The A4 amendment? Do we have the...
I think he's passing it out.
Will you want to go ahead and just start explaining the amendment?
This amendment was brought me by Representative Erdahl. This amendment relates to the Annandale Maple Lake Supreme Court case. Annandale and Maple Lake proposed a wastewater treatment plant between the two towns. BCA approved that the lawsuit followed. The Supreme Court heard the case August 9th. They have not yet rendered a decision. All this time, they haven't called speedy justice. In the meantime, many Minnesota cities have been unable to access grants from PUA because they are contingent to the court decision. Other cities will have their ranking on projects affected because of the case has not been decided. This amendment simply allows more time for the affected cities to be eligible for previous approved grants and maintain their project ranking for time specified. In other words, this keeps things the way they should go until the judge renders his decision.
Representative Gunther, we don't have your amendment, and maybe your staff didn't get it to the committee. But I have been... Representative Erdahl talked to me about this, and my understanding is then that they would retain their place in the ranking at the... Is Mr. Coleman in the audience or somebody else? Just to get an opinion here. Not that we may necessarily follow it, but because I think it's pretty reasonable. But go ahead, sir. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon. My name is Jeff Freeman. I'm Assistant Director of the Public Facilities Authority. Terry Coleman couldn't be here. But Representative Gunther is correct. This language will basically hold harmless the cities that are otherwise affected by not being able to move ahead with their projects because of that Annandale Maple Lake case, which hasn't yet been decided. So they would retain their position on the intended use plan for the loan program. And I believe the language also affects the FOSS grant program and extends the timelines for projects under that program as well.
Okay, we have one copy, but the copies weren't made. So we'll make a copy of this. And there's no opposition then from the agency at all on this at all?
No.
And why can you make, you need it put this in statute too?
Otherwise, projects would lose their place on the ranking system. Projects that were carried over last year and were given one more year essentially are going to need this additional time. We thought that court case would have been decided by now.
But. Okay. Well, thank you, sir. Go ahead.
I just want to make sure. Now, I'm not entirely positive, but I'm going to guess that this has to do with the watershed issues and the inability to do economic development until we deal with the clean water concerns that have been brought forth. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, that's correct. There are a lot of cities that cannot get wastewater discharge permits issued by TCA because they are on hold while this issue over Annandale Maple Lake, which actually is related to phosphorus discharge and a TMDL that will be prepared sometime in the future on Lake Teffin by Flood Control Agency. But while that's being, until that's done, right now this court case is preventing a number of cities from getting permits issued.
So then to follow up, Mr.
Go
Chair.
Ahead.
So if we put this amendment on and we pass this into law, are we going to hold up other cities from getting their projects done by just holding money in the bank waiting for that Supreme Court decision to be made?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Mahoney, if this language did not pass and this court case drags out for some time longer, the funds that are currently reserved for these projects would move to others. However, these communities, I guess we see it, this is beyond their control. They've done everything that they were required to do to be eligible for the program and can't go any further because of that. So it seems like that's the fair thing to do.
Well, Mr. Chair, my only concern is that we don't have any idea as to how long the Supreme Court may drag this on, and it could drag on a couple of years. So my concern is that we have other communities, whether they're northwest, southeast, or wherever, are in line, and now all of a sudden we're going to wait a couple years with multiple millions sitting in the bank. Is that what we're going to end up doing?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, for the State Revolving Fund Loan Program, we will continue with a new project list next fiscal year, and we will take into account that some of these projects are on hold and we'll be able to add new projects. So if they are ready to go, if they are able to get permits issued, we'll go ahead and fund them as well. The issue with phosphorus grants is a little different. There is no additional money. So that money either goes for the current projects or would go to some others. That's the $2.3 million that was appropriated last year. But the bulk of the projects, the State Revolving Fund, which is the biggest program, this action will hold harmless these current projects, but also other projects will still be able to go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Just then, to reassure myself, too, I was just talking the two communities. Or how many communities are we talking about here? And what kind of money are we actually talking about?
The phosphorus grant program, there are, I believe, up to five communities that are in this situation.
And it's not going, if we, this money, will it, it it'll be held there for them, but it won't really, I think what I hope Representative Mahoney, I've got the same kind, it's not going to hurt other projects from happening that are on the list coming up and moving on to the list this year, or will it?
Well, if this language were not to pass, then the communities that can't get their projects approved wouldn't get funding. The money would basically slide down the list to other projects that were able to proceed. And we haven't, at this point, we don't know exactly who the winners and losers would be on that, but that is true. There would be some communities that right now aren't in the funding range that the money could slide down to them if these higher-ranked communities are not able to go ahead.
And
but it only affects the phosphorus grant program, five communities right now that have been identified for $2.3 million as appropriated last year. It does not affect the projects. We will probably have $100 million worth of projects, new loan projects ready to go next year. It won't affect those. We'll continue to add those to the list and fund them as they're ready to go.
And Representative Gunter, was this language in the bonding bill yesterday?
Yes, it was.
So Representative Erdahl's learning the ropes. He's going to put it in as many places as he needs.
Can we have it everywhere?
Okay. Representative, this language is already in the bonding bill.
Right. Yep.
It must not have been that controversial. I don't oppose it.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I don't oppose it either. I've worked a good bit on this. There are communities that have committed considerable resources of their own, and I'm confident that actually this legal process will be completed relatively soon. It's in good faith we should allow for them not to lose their place, not to lose the resources and work that they've already put forward. So,
Representative Gunter then moves the 07978 amendment. Any other questions on it? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have to run, but I just wanted to tell you that it seems to me that this bill is a very resourceful and balanced bill, and it's an excellent document to go forward with. It seems to me that you've met your goals, and we're going to hear it in economic earth.
Mary Murphy's
finance committee. That's what we call it.
Education, finance, and economic competitiveness committee on Friday. And if there are to be any amendments, then I would expect that they would mostly pertain to finances, if there are. I either have to have them, if there's a gross copy available before 5 o'clock tomorrow, or if there isn't an engrossed copy before 5 o'clock, I have to have at least the intent of the amendment turned in by 5 o'clock tomorrow afternoon to Christina Gozak. And, Mr. Chair, one of the questions that I'm going to ask you on Friday before we receive this document and vote on this document is if you have received any information about the contract settlement at Crookston campus.
And then if I haven't, are you going to sit on the bill or what?
Well, I may have to be the amendment, Mr. Chair.
That's a policy issue.
It would have to do with finance.
Well, Representative Murphy, I think you should go by my standards. The only rules are the ones I make up on the fly.
That's true, Mr. Chair. I'll take your advice. I'll take that
Representative
advice.
Murphy, it's been a pleasure, and you don't want to ask about any of your other projects in the bill at all, like Thompson Township or anything like that?
Mr. Chair, I have the bill in my hand.
Okay.
And I appreciate it.
We've valued your input.
The librarians are here today, and I hope they have noticed the appropriation for Minutemen.
They were very pleased.
Amen.
Representative, okay. Representative Murphy will try to get any amendments and oversights we might miss today to you on time. And you're making a big assumption that we're going to get this bill out of here today, right? We're going to get this bill out.
You are.
Yes, we are.
You are probably within your afternoon time.
Well, I hope so. Okay, Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have an amendment. I don't know if it's been passed out yet. I guess not. It's the 0631 amendment.
Representative Clark moves the 807-0631 amendment. If the page is passed that out, and I don't know where Anders is, but I want to thank Nina and Anders both, too, for the wonderful job they've done and the time they've put in, and I hope they've learned a little bit from us. They've taught some things to me, so. Anyway, here we have the amendment coming. Representative Clark, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. This amendment is sometimes known as the DREAM Act. It deals with making sure that students who are residents of our state have lived here for at least 3 years, graduated from a Minnesota high school, or have the equivalent of that, and are enrolled at a public institution, will have the same, will be eligible for resident tuition in our state. And, Mr. Chairman, just a couple of points to make about this amendment. This really is about people's dreams, hopes, and aspirations. And it does provide, if we pass this amendment, it does provide some access to those students who were minors when they were brought into this country by their parents who were looking for an opportunity, for economic opportunity usually. And they are currently part of our K-12 student population. They've worked hard. Many of them are honor students that we're very proud of. And they want to be productive citizens of the state. And what we're trying to do here is provide them that kind of equal access. There's no special privileges provided here. They still need to pay in-state tuition rates, and they do not qualify for financial aid help like many of our other students would. One of the arguments that's sometimes used against this provision is that it might displace other students, and we just have to say that we now have less people coming into our post-secondary opportunities in our schools, and there's an aging demographic population. No one's going to be displaced, but I think people are going to be provided an incredible opportunity to try to fulfill their desire to have an equal education. The fiscal note, which I have, has no cost to the state. And one of the things I can say about that is we don't know for sure what the benefit might be. The department has not been able to actually quantify that because we don't know what additional forms of tuition that's not now being collected would come to the state. Mr. Chairman, I think this is an amendment. I know a lot of people have had a lot of discussion about it. It's very close to the heart of a lot of our new immigrant students, and I would ask the committee's support, strong support, please.
Questions to the amendment? Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I understand that this is kind of a hot topic, and there's been numerous debate on it already. I just want to weigh in with just a couple of thoughts on this. There's other people we need to consider, and those are people that have come into this process legally. Those are the ones that have come in, and they have gone through the regular process and have come to achieve citizen status. through the normal means. Second is there are 11 Minsky campuses in Minnesota right now who don't charge out-state tuition. They should be able to go to those, so I'm not sure why the DREAM Act is required. And the third is there is another avenue for these individuals to become citizens of not just Minnesota, but of the United States. And we talked about this before in committee, and that's the military option. And it really does weigh in to those individuals taking some time out to serve the country that they want to live in, attain that citizenship, and actually get educational benefits to attend these universities. So I appreciate the thought on this whole process, but I think if people are willing to come to this country and abide by the laws, they ought to be preferred in that particular case, those who are willing to go through the normal process, and those who can't have another avenue or another venue through the military to achieve that citizenship and get educational benefits. So I would speak against the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Clark, for bringing this forward. I know there's a lot of people here in this committee who feel very strongly about this issue and about this act. I just want to say a couple things about it. One, Representative Stevenson is right. There are many of our institutions that already offer, don't have out-of-state tuition. And I think it would be arguable as to how many people would actually take advantage of this option and what the fiscal cost will be. It probably won't be all that great. I think it strikes at something far deeper. And what does this institution stand for, and what does our committee, in fact, stand for? My understanding is that it's for equal access to all residents of the state of Minnesota to our higher education facilities. And I think the statement that we make here in our committee, in particular the Higher Education Committee, is symbolic to so many Minnesotans that there aren't double standards. There is equal access. We don't discriminate in any way for citizens. And that the message that we're then sending out to our residents of the state is that we value all of you. We value all of your rights. You all have access to... Thank you. You all have access to our, I've been asked to cut it short, to our higher education institution. So please support the amendment.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, just one question. If this bill passes and it becomes law, are we... We as state legislators, are we breaking the federal law?
I don't believe so. No. There's other states that have this, so.
Okay, Mr. Chairman. So if I moved in here from Iowa, went to high school for 1 year, I would not qualify under this.
Yep. Yes. 3 years.
It states you have to be in high school for 3 years here.
If you moved from Iowa and went to high school,
1 year.
One year in Minnesota, I would not qualify.
I would assume
for in-state.
If you were a legal immigrant, you might not. But I would assume if you're,
no, it's true.
You would. But maybe counsel can help me on that.
My miss was 1 year. I think it's 1 year.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Detmer, I believe lines. Sorry, I believe lines 1.13, lines 13 to 15 on the amendment say that this is in addition to any other provisions in state law, and the typical waiting period for resident tuition is 1 year in Minnesota. So I believe under your under what you propose that a person coming here from any state, Iowa or anywhere else, who is a legal resident of the United States could have resident tuition when they graduate from a Minnesota high school.
For 1 year.
After living here for 1 year.
Representative McFarland.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I have a question. I've been looking at some of the applications for registering for a college, and it asks for a social security number. Do undocumented people that live here, do they have social security numbers, or can they get them?
I don't know the answer to that, but I believe that question was asked when the and I think somebody from the Office of Higher Education or Minsky answered that question. Is there somebody from one of the institutions that can answer that? Representative Peterson, you know? Sir?
The Social Security number is not required.
Why don't you come down? Identify yourself again, Mr. Lopez.
Mr. Chairman, Mike Lopez again, Associate Vice Chancellor of Student Affairs. We do ask for a Social Security number, but it is not required. So an individual, whether regardless of where they're from, can leave the Social Security number blank, and we will still process the application and still admit the student based on their qualification.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, could we find out from Minsky on that, too?
That is Minsky.
I'm quite out with the
University. Huh. Representative, I'm going to go in order here. Representative Mahoney to this issue.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Members, I thought we would have, when I raised my hand, I thought it would be a much quicker than this. This is something that I've supported for the 8 years that I've been here. It's about time that we bring the underground workforce up above ground for a variety of reasons, whether it is just the general betterment of the state of Minnesota, or to make sure that when they work, when we have plumbers doing plumbing work, we don't have them doing it underground. They get it inspected and they do everything else. It's just time to start bringing this underground economy out of the shadows and putting them as part of our state and welcoming them. We're a nation of immigrants. It's time to start acting like one.
Representative Haas.
Yes, I just had one question of the author of the amendment. In some of the previous amendments, it talked about working towards citizenship, or is this just a general student eligibility? Okay. Why is that not on this list?
Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Haas. There were some questions raised in one of the committees, I think by actually a member of this committee, about whether or not that might jeopardize some of the family status. So at this point, we've taken that little part out. I think we need to look at it and see whether or not that needs to actually be required in this legislation. I'm not sure that it does.
Thank you.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I'd start by saying that you put together a good bill.
Thank you.
I say that's...
Did you find out the answer from your community college person that was worried about the bill?
Not exactly, but it wasn't exactly what it looked like, the bill.
Thank you, Leon.
Yes. And what I wanted to say is that, again, you've put together things from a good bill with a lot of good things in it. However, I would caution you, if this amendment is included, you have a very likely possibility of a veto of your entire bill. And so I would caution members, even though you favor it and think it's a good idea, the governor doesn't. And so if you want to keep the bill and the good work that's been done, then I think the right thing to do would be to vote down the amendment.
Well, Representative Norness, that's a good point, but, you know, the counterpoint is that we are the lawmaking body of this state, and sometimes we don't agree with the executive branch of government, and that's... You know, it's our obligation to write laws, and I guess if this goes on, we're going to go to a conference committee, and, you know, I guess we'll have to feel out the governor's office, because then maybe we'll have some, you know, input from the governor. I met with the governor privately on just, you know, things in general. I tried to get everybody to leave the room so him and I could cut a deal, but nobody'd leave. And I even offered to get frisked by one of the security guys outside, but they didn't care about that. So, but you know, he never ever brought this issue up to me. This is not an issue he brought up to me.
Well, Mr. Chair, probably because it wasn't in the bill yet. I'm just saying, it's just a word of caution. And if you want to fight the fight, that's you're welcome to that. But I do know the governor is very, very adamant about it, and I don't think he'll change his mind. So, but that's my two cents.
Well, again, you know, people have to do what they think is the right thing, and we all got elected to come down here and try to do good things for people. And I think a lot of, you know, folks have mixed feelings maybe on this. I really don't. You know, I'm the grandson of Croats and Italians who came to this country because things weren't good in those countries, and land wasn't available, and there were big families, and they were told there was opportunity to make money, and a lot of those people had this idea to come here and make money and go home, but they never got to. And I grew up in a neighborhood where my next-door neighbors were the Ilkinens from Finland, and the neighbors across the street were Gobeces from Croatia, and next to them were the Kaburkas from Poland. And you know, we are a nation of immigrants, and you can talk about legal versus illegal, but you know, the fact of the matter is that people came to this country for a bunch of different reasons, and at that time we were a growing country that needed working people. And you know, if you were European, you could get into this country, and actually the South Slavs and the Italians didn't have as easy of a time getting into this country. So I can understand where this whole issue is coming from, and I'm going to support the amendments merely because of my upbringing and the fact that I grew up in an area where with 40 different nationalities working in the mines, we kind of had to gang up together on the mining company. So
Mr. Chair,
the mentality I grew up with, so I'm supporting the amendment.
Chair, I would only add that they all came through the process of becoming citizens.
And I touched on that, Representative Norris, because at the time the process was, let's get people here, let's use them as much as we can use them and abuse them as much as we can abuse them, because we've got to get resources out of the ground to make money. And right now there's a question in this country of why these people are here and why their parents are here. But these are kids. That's the bottom line here. You know, these are kids. And kids can't be blamed for what their parents do. I see us all the time. We want to get at people that are on welfare, and we hurt the kids because the parents are slugs, you know? And it happens all the time. So, to me, that's my bottom line of thinking. You know, we're a nation of immigrants. We're supposed to be a compassionate, God-fearing nation. These are young kids that, they didn't break the law. They just happened to have somebody that came here looking for a better life, like my grandparents, that maybe did, but it's not their fault. So that's my two cents where it's Representative. Anybody else got anything to say? If not, Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you know, I know this is a hot topic. And I guess the issue that I'm trying to deal with here is when we're referencing this is a nation of immigrants, you know, I spent some time, went out to Ellis Island, and I saw what those immigrants, your descendants, went through. And it was not fun. But they were committed to go through the process. They were committed to spend some time on that island, and they were committed to, if they had to, catch a train to come out to Minnesota to get some land. And but they had to go through some pretty humiliating stuff when they went through that process. But they knew that it was for a cause of a better life. And so I understand that perspective here. However, they came through the system legally. And I guess the problem I have here is we aren't putting these kids in jail. We aren't saying you're going to have to go into forced servitude for 15 years to get your citizenship. We're saying that if you want to become a citizen of this country, you can go into the military, serve this country for 4 years, and get out, and we will pay for your education. So we're basically saying for those individuals who have gone through the process, you didn't really need to do that, or the people that have gone through the process in the military, sorry, but we got this other state over here who lets you go through. So I do not support this because I think it undermines the very values of this nation. And Mr. Chair, I'd request a roll call.
Roll call being requested. Are there any further comments? Representative Mahoney.
I think Representative Norton was first, but I'll just add to the comments that I don't think Ellis Island opened until about 1905 or 1910. Prior to that, just like with my great-grandfather, all you had to do was walk across the border, and you became a U.S. citizen pretty much. And I'm sure anyone that came before the 1900, not very much that they had to do other than walk across the border and come off the ship.
Representative Norton, would you have a comment?
Chair Cabina, my blood pressure went up a little bit, so bear with me here for a moment.
I've got this.
In response to the representative across the way talking about military, my son is serving in the military, and he serves with these children, these young men and women. They're serving in order to gain citizenship. They're serving with their lives. And that's what we want. If you want to be a citizen in this country, you go, and if you live through the experience, then we'll give you your certificate. I'm sorry, but we are recruiting the poor and the wrong people for our military. I'm proud that they serve. I think it's great that they do. It's been a wonderful experience for my son and his friends. But that's not a reason. That's not a way that we gain citizenship into this country. It's wrong. And I'll tell you, when the first deaths came back, do you know who? Did you look at the names on those lists? Now, it's changed now because we've been over there a long time. Hernandez, Gomez. The names were primarily Hispanic and disproportionately so. And that angers me. That's not the kind of country I want to live in. So I'm sorry, but sending a child into war in order to gain citizenship is not the right way. If we can send them to college, they're not here of their own accord. They're here because of their parents. That's been said. If we can give these kids the opportunity to better themselves, to go on with the investment that we've given them, K-12, and go to higher ed, I'm all for it.
Clerk, to that point. Representative Severson, to that point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my son is over there as well. He's been over there for the last 18 months, and he served in Afghanistan before that, and he has friends who are serving with him, and he believes the same values. He serves with those same individuals that have come to this country for citizenship and are serving in the military. But to say they're children is a misnomer. These are men. These are women who have made a decision to serve their country because they understand that freedom comes with a sacrifice. So I don't buy off on the issue that it's inhumane to ask people who want to step up to the plate and serve that we're being discriminatory against them. This is a free country because of the price that is paid by many people, and it's paid on the battlefield.
Representative Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In my district, the second biggest community is St. James, Minnesota, which is about 40% Hispanic or Latino. And in that community, what we need more than anything else is leaders. We need Kiwanis Club members. We need business owners. That doesn't come automatically. That comes with a lot of study and a lot of hard work. And that's why I co-authored the Dream Act bill. Because until we get that community to assimilate into ours, we are not going to progress. Until we get that community to develop leaders like my friend Mario Hernandez, who went to Southwest State College, we are not going to progress to have those assimilated like in my family. I got 8 nationalities. I'm a mutt. But the Germans, well, Norwegians, Swedes,
your bike
Irish,
isn't as bad as your bike, you know.
Yeah. I don't know. You're getting cornered. But that's why I co-authored that bill, because I truly believe that until we develop leaders in their community that they can look up to, we are not going to progress in this, assimilating them into our society.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I agree with Representative Severson. Both my sons have served over in Iraq. One is back over for a second tour. But we wouldn't be talking about this if we would just have a bill that would say no out-of-state tuition in Minnesota. Why hasn't somebody presented a bill such as that? Why even have a state without a state tuition? I mean, you come up with this Dream Act that's such a controversy in our state. You know, why not open that up for young people from Iowa, Wisconsin,
all the states, to all U.S. citizens. Thank you.
Okay. No further questions. Clerk, will take the roll.
Rukavina?
Yes.
Abson?
Aye.
Lye?
Aye.
Reiner?
Aye.
Clark?
Yes.
Detmer?
No.
Eastland? Spencer?
Yes.
Hawes?
Yes.
Portman?
Yes.
Mahoney?
Yes.
McFarland?
No.
Mole?
Yes.
Nornis?
No.
Norton?
Yes.
Poppy?
No.
Ruth?
No.
Severson?
No.
Slocum?
Yes.
Welty?
No.
There being 12 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Further amendments? I believe I have my amendment. If there are no other further amendments from the committee members, is my amendment copied, Gina? I'll offer the H.O. 797-810 amendment. Members, as soon as you're getting it, we'll go through it. Members, let me go through as you're getting the amendment. I'll start by explaining it. The first 17 lines deal with dollar changes, and they're either relating to errors, they're non-policy adjustments, but the main only real substantive change in here is $200,000 request for Nelson's contractor bill, if you recall. Representative Mahoney, I don't know where he is, but it's for that program, and we needed to start it up initially before the funding came in. So that's, I was just, Representative Mahoney, referencing the amendment you made for the Nelson bill. Or when you were...
The 813 amendment?
No, this is the dollar I'm explaining, so... It costs money to do that up front. It'll be reimbursed as the fees come in. And that's the only real change in there in why we're changing money, because of the bill, or because of a bill. The $12,404,000 language there is because, you recall, I wanted the university to know that they're going to put that money towards lowering tuition, or we're going to bring it back to us. Okay. The Welty, Representative Welty, had requested this because he screwed up, and or somebody did, and there was supposed to be money in here for a particular program that we just are taking from that $5 and $6, I believe, million-dollar appropriation to the university. We're dedicating it to this particular program. The lines you see on 22 and 23, the deletions, I inadvertently repealed the 67% requirement that's on the books for state support. There are other dollar ones you see there are... there was some typos. One change on the top of line 3, I had told staff to take care of former Representative Price's request is up there in the audience. I see that Representative Mahoney brought forward for the deaf students in the Minnesota Conservation Corps, and I didn't get it in the bill like I wanted to, so that's taking care of that. So let's see. I promised Dolly, Department of Labor and Industry, for that prevailing wage language that's in the bill, that we would put $60,000 of administrative money in there to get the word out to contractors, and it was mistakenly left out by me. Now that's that language in the middle of the page there. Members, there is one I want to talk about, lines 3.23 in the bill. Several years ago, I passed a bill that really just the only question on it was actually from Ms. Wade, who is walking in the room right now, and it was to, so we kind of have a black market in the hospitality industry, and that people aren't really supposed to be working in places that serve liquor in certain capacities, and they are. And I passed the bill. There was no opposition to what I did. The language is right there that you see, that language change. And I, the hospitality industry had asked me to do something with it, and I said I'd put it in this bill if there wasn't any opposition. There wasn't any opposition in the end by anyone. I passed it in former Representative Wilkins' committee, and I got to the floor. They thought I was going to use it as a vehicle for workers' comp or something. I don't know what they thought. I wasn't going to use it for that. But so that's what I'm doing there. There's prevailing wage language. By the way, the prevailing wage language in the bill, there is no opposition from the Department of Labor and Industry, I don't believe. But the civil action language, help me out on this, Council. Did I have it in two places, or what was the problem with that?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. It was in the bill, and then the agreement on the prevailing wage also had civil action in it, so it's duplicated.
Okay. There's the explanation for that. So that's what the rest of that is. And the independent contractor language on page 6, I believe, definitions, is that for Representative Eastland's concern, or was that a different issue? Oh, that's the whole bill, in fact, because we didn't have the bill in our possession, remember? So it's including the bill in here, as we heard it from Representative Nelson. And I believe, does this include language that addressed the concern of Representative? Do you have that language? Does somebody have that language?
I would have to look. Did not see it in my...
Representative Eastland had a small concern about defining individual independent contractor, you know, when he brought it up that night. And I thought we were going to try to address it in this amendment. Other than that, members, I... there's one other thing in here, Representative Clark. Do you want to explain the last few pages of the bill? Starting on line 13.10 on page 13.
Oh, yes, Mr. Chair. This is a bill that went through several other committees, and it deals with protecting workers who are working in any of our public agencies and are either silenced or somehow prevented from doing their job. Because are speaking out and speaking out about concerns if they are being told that they can't talk to legislators or to others about the work that they're doing. And we've had a few incidents in the state where that's happened recently, and so this would just provide those kind of protections that Dolly can ensure they have. And
I'm not aware.
There seems to be a lot of controversy about it or anything.
Okay, and so this went through Representative Atkins' committee,
yes,
or Representative Davis' committee?
Yes.
Dabney's committee? Okay. Now, Representative McFarland, I had a kind of a policy on policy that went through other policy committees. And because of, you know, bills were being heard all over the place and having trouble getting here, I was hearing bills that came either directly to this committee or dealt with money that weren't heard before. And so this bill has had a full two hearings, like a number of other bills that we've included in the bill that we never really heard the policy on because of that. So that was my reasoning. Any questions then on this amendment? Representative Welty.
Thank you, Chairman Rukavina. Just to clear something up, there were a number of requests that came forward for the U of M Ag Special, and this was one of those small items that was not included, so we're just coming back to include it now to make it a comprehensive Ag Special. And also, I just wanted to have on record that the $400,000 is going to MISA, but it's going to be going through the University of Minnesota Extension Service, mm-hmm. so this is not a direct appropriation of MISA, and we want to get that on record because there are a few other organizations that essentially have an office at the University of Minnesota, and I just don't want the Minnesota Institute for Sustainable Agriculture to think that they're just going to get a direct appropriation, because if that happened, then there would be about four or five other organizations that would be coming forward in future years asking for a direct appropriation. So this is going through the university, and it's, as I spoke with Ms. Novak, the way that we have put this in the language, it will be going through the University of Minnesota. To me, thank you.
Questions on the amendment? Representative Mahoney.
Two questions, Mr. Chair, and to the language that Representative Eastland had concerns about yesterday, I did not find it, and I don't think it's in here. So I will take the advice of Representative Murphy and have something prepared for her committee by Friday, if this bill gets out of here by Friday.
I promised Representative Eastland we'd try to address that, and it would be correct.
Yeah, and I'll make sure that that gets in there, if you don't mind. I'll just take care of it for you. The other is there was a bill for the spin-off technologies that was supposed to have $3 million in the second year. Has that been corrected?
That's corrected, yes. That was supposed to read $3 million in the second year. It read $3 million on the spreadsheet, I believe, in the wrong year.
Correct.
Or $1.5 million.
$1.5 million.
First nine. Year. But on the spreadsheet, it was right, and we corrected it in this amendment.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, that's on line 2.32 there. Okay. Questions? Other questions? Other comments on the amendment? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Are there any other amendments to the bill? Representative Coffey.
I do have one, but it's being copied.
Representative,
I'd like to move the A8 amendment.
The A8 amendment. Do you have the, who's got the A8 amendment? Is it in our packet?
It should be on the
is it up?
Mr. Chair, yeah. Why not all the amendments be handed out to us all at once so we have them here?
We don't know if they're going to offer them, and we don't even know if they've been given to the staff. Do we have, where is our, no, they're copying other amendments.
Yeah.
We got any volunteers in the audience to be patient? Let's see who's got a lot of money in the bill. Mr. Fitzgerald, you want to come talk to us? Could you help us out here?
Look at the hands again.
Representative Nornes to the A8 amendment.
Mr. Chair, this addresses the increase in the size of the Board of Trustees from INSCU. In the bill, it increases the number to 17, adding two AFL-CIO members, and also gives them the right to recruit and recommend members. I guess I'm offering the amendment to strike that language because I believe 15 is a good number. I believe that the board as it has been, representing each congressional district and students and so forth, has been a good mix, and that union members have an opportunity to be among those chosen. And the other question I'd have is, you know, why we single out AFL-CIO and we don't include MAPE and AFSCME, which represents most of the state employees. So why would they be excluded from even being in this? So that's my amendment.
The chair would oppose the amendment, Representative Nornes. The AFL-CIO is the umbrella organization. MAPE and AFSCME, I believe, are both, maybe MAPE is and AFSCME is. But I'm sure that that the AFL-CIO is the umbrella organization of most of the organized labor unions in this state, would be very fair to the employees that work in the Minsky system. And my concern is that for years, there have been no labor people put on the board, both by the Ventura, I believe, and the Pawlenty administration. So I would oppose the amendment, and all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion does not prevail. Amendment is not adopted. Representative.
A little faster.
Do we have any other amendments?
I was supposed to give
a 8-7 amendment?
Why don't we take the copy amendment that's being distributed right now, and then Representative Stevenson, do you want to get your amendment to the pages there? Nina can grab them from you, so we're ready for you next. Representative Poppy moves the amendment. She moves to amend. It's a handwritten amendment. It starts with page 95, line 29, delete. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is one that's brought forward. Representative Fritz has this bill, actually, and so this is the clarification of language that's been discussed with the healthcare personnel and people involved in this patient here. So it's defining the healthcare facility by using and taking out the medical facility and putting in an outpatient surgical center, and then it also strikes the Commissioner of Labor and Industry and inserts Minnesota State Council on Disability, as because they are the ones that actually will help to facilitate and coordinate.
Okay. Any questions on that? I believe the medical facility was a concern of the clinics in the state. And the second part is in the...
And the second part is on page 104.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually the Minnesota State Council on Disability has agreed to help to coordinate this. So that's why the change there.
Any questions on the amendment? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Representative Severson, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the amendment, you're going to like this amendment. Your numbers that you've targeted for Minsky and for the U of M have been generous. And so what this amendment basically does is it says...
You go ahead. You keep talking. The chair doesn't have an amendment, but...
No.
Nobody has it.
What number is it?
Okay, so.
I just have hold your currency, so.
Hasn't been handed
out. Representative Severson offers the H0797A7 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this freezes tuition because of the numbers that you have put at the base for add-on to the base for Minsky and for the University of Minnesota. This basically kind of augments a little bit of the amendment that you had put on. It basically says that if those numbers go through and that's added onto the base, that the University of Minnesota and the U of M cannot increase the tuition rate for the students in the next biennium that we are working on here, 08-09. So the numbers that you put in at the base to add onto the base for 06-07 would be calculated, and then they cannot increase their tuition. They would have to freeze their tuition.
Mr. Chair, I'd ask for a roll call vote.
Can I just take a second to look at this? Questions to the amendment, Representative Hartman, why don't you go first and then Mahoney? While I'm looking at it with staff.
Mr. Chair, I
I don't think that doing an unfunded mandate like this is the right direction we want to go. I think that your tuition buy-down money that you put in the bill will allow the institutions to hold the tuition increase to about 2% and 2%. Before I got elected and those big, huge budget cuts were made, the tuition was increasing at 12 and 13% a year. And not entirely because I got elected, but following that, tuition increased at 6% and 6%. And now instead of doing 4 and 4, we're looking at 2% and 2%. And I do take some credit because I do think the fact that the state of Minnesota sent 14 new Democrats the year that I came here said that they weren't really interested in cutting government so much and passing the buck down to the students. So, but I don't believe that an unfunded mandate is the way to go. I think the chair has done the right work here, and so I oppose the Severson Amendment.
Representative Mahoney.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure if Representative Severson was here when the respective bodies, MNCU and the U of M, were here. And although we can't do that for the U of M, it was very clear that they were just going to lay off staff and increase class sizes and drop off the number of programs that they would have to do. They would have open to our students in our state if we chose to follow down that route of tuition freeze. So I'm going to vote against this because I don't want to see any teachers laid off. I don't want to see less classes offered to our students and larger classroom sizes because our students need to have some personal attention by the professors.
Representative, to that point, there's other people I want to talk against them.
Okay.
We'll let you wrap it up, is that okay?
Okay, that's fine.
Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to speak against this amendment. I think it has the appearance of helping students while actually creating an adversarial relationship between the university and students who have worked hard together to come to the proposals that we've entertained here. And I think it would micromanage the university in a way that's destructive to the kind of collaborative relationship students and the university have developed. And I see somebody in the audience shaking their head to that effect who's worked hard on aspects of this bill for tuition reduction. So while it has the appearance of helping students, I just believe it would be destructive. So that's my...
Representative Doctor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also have a little institutional memory here. I remember when higher education was given a 14% interest increase, and they still raised tuition. How much do we have to give them before they leave the students have a little bit of break? And I know Representative Mahoney was here when that was done, and I do believe we talked about that. But anyway, it always doesn't work in favor of the institution. Sometimes it should work in favor of the students, and I favor this amendment because of that.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Portman, 4 years ago, we were facing a $4.5 billion budget shortfall. We were looking for money under rocks, and it was a requirement to rein in the budgets on many institutions. And in the education process, we tried to hold them level and took cuts on many other avenues, up to 15% in government. We were bleeding. When you came back, we actually were on the mend. And so you could attribute some of that to the 14 that were elected as a DFL. I would attribute it to the previous legislature that made some hard choices, and we had to make those hard choices because we weren't going to raise taxes. If we're talking about a 10% increase, is what we're talking about here for the MNCU and the U of M institution, and they can't live within that 10%, they're going to continue to pass on more costs to our students. When do we as policymakers say, wait a minute, you guys need to hold the line here. Quit passing it on to the students and take some efficiencies within your own organization. And they'll arguably say that we took those efficiencies 4 years ago. I would argue that we've had a couple years where they've been able to build that up, and Mr. Chair, I would ask that you support this amendment.
Representative Fox.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just probably to that point, I do work at a Minsky institution, and I'll tell you that as a counselor at the institution, we provide support services to students. And at my college, we are down now 1.5 counselors for the amount of students that have that we have at the college. And that's the kind of thing that still continues to go on because we don't have the money to be able to provide what we need to for the students. So as much as I'd like to say I do support freezing tuition, I really do think that we need to continue to progress in the way that we are, and I appreciate that Chair Rukavina has brought forth a bill that keeps it at 2%. Certainly, I think that's a positive way of going. So I'd like to just commend him for that. But we certainly, as a Minsky institution that I work at, I know that they are facing every day. They're facing what the budget is, and they're trying to do what they can. And sometimes that means cutting student services, which I think is certainly a concern.
I would hope the committee votes against the amendment. It costs Minsky about $27+ and million, excuse me. I'm thinking about my budget. Anyway, and $43 million, almost $44 million to the university. I listened to the students, Representative Severson, and the students from all the systems said, don't help us with tuition, but in helping us with tuition, don't hurt the institutions. Fund them as close to what the request is because they've been hammered and hurt too. So, you know, I won't even get into the mess that's been created in this state with income tax cuts and Minnesota miracle changes and everything else. I'll just say I hope the committee votes against your amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Would you ask for a roll call?
I requested a roll call, Mr. Chair.
Oh, sorry, I didn't hear that. Clerk will take the roll. Rukavina votes no.
Atkins?
No.
Wise?
No.
Reiner?
No.
Clark?
No.
Detmer?
Yes.
Eastman?
Yes.
Dunn?
Yes.
Hawes?
No.
Portman?
No.
Mahoney?
No.
McFarland?
Yes.
Moe?
No.
Nornan?
Yes.
Norton?
No.
Poppy?
No.
Drew?
Yes.
Severson?
Yes.
Flotham?
No.
Welty?
No.
There being 13 nays and 7 ayes, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Next amendment, Representative Gunter, are you passing the amendment?
I am getting Amendment A14 distributed as we speak.
Representative Gunter moves the A14 amendment.
And
if you want to just start on what you're doing.
I'd be glad to start right now.
Go ahead.
Here, I was wondering, Mr. Chairman, I know we normally don't like to have testifiers, but I have a Mr. White that would like to testify on the importance of Minnesota Investment Fund money. Would that be permissible?
Mr. White, we're the hour of our committee is ending, but we'll be coming back at 6, and we'll be staying until we finish. So, Mr. White, do you want to come down and just quickly give us your input?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Myron White. I'm the director of the Port Authority in Redwing, Minnesota, and I've been an economic development practitioner, a local economic development practitioner, for about 17 years, and 12 of them in the last 12 years in Redwing. And I just wanted to testify that the Redwing Port Authority, as the economic development agency for the city, has used the Minnesota Investment Fund on a number of occasions to both keep and grow jobs in Redwing. Most recently, we had a company by the name of DBI Sala. They make fall protection equipment for the primarily the construction and oil industry. They're the largest manufacturer. They approached the Port Authority and said, we've got direction from our home office, and we've been directed to move our manufacturing facility from Redwing to Toronto, Canada. We worked with Deed and the Minnesota Investment Fund, and were able to change their mind. And instead of losing some 200 jobs to Toronto, the DBI Sala now employs about 325 people in Red Wing, Minnesota, and is growing at a rapid pace. And Deed is the largest manufacturer of fall protection equipment in the world. So just a single example of how the Minnesota Investment Fund works for communities in greater Minnesota. I could give you a handful of examples, but I know your time is short. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. White. And this will be the final amendment we do until we come back at 6. I would oppose the amendment, members.
Mr. Chairman, I always like to have balanced amendments, and I, as the amendment says, I'm trying to take this money from the 21st Century Mineral Funds. I'd like to give members a little history of the 21st Century Mineral Funds. Originally, we took $49 million from the 21st Century Mineral Funds. That was money that was not used in anywhere else that would have canceled into the general fund. However, since that time, we have used $8 million for Mesabi Nugget, $10 million for Mesabi Nugget, now SDI. Additional $11.5 million for the Century Fund Steel Plant, 21st Century Fund Steel Plant in 2006. Also in 2006, the Itasca County Development Steel Plant or Electrical Generating Facility. That amounts to $43.5 million we borrowed or we took. It wasn't me, but it was taken. $49 million. You add the $25 million Representative, or Chairman Rokovina's got in there, far exceeds what the original amount was. And all I simply want to do is take some of this money for a very important use for the whole state. This money helps start industries and keep industries going where you live, as Mr. White mentioned. So all I simply want to do is borrow $5 million out of Representative Rokovina's 21st Century Mineral Fund that he's already spent $43.5 million of and is asking for $25. I just want to take $5. So he has $65 million. So that's all I want to do, and I appreciate your vote.
Members, Bobby. First of all, I can't believe you ran a grocery. I hope your brother did the books and not you. Because I think you're cooking the books. But anyway, your numbers are way off, and let me tell you why. You're counting Iron Range Resources money. Members, we got $60 million from the SUR. We got you're also counting bonding money for Itasca County, which was not in the 21st Century Mineral Fund. Members, quickly, for 6 years, three legislative sessions, the Iron Range delegation gave up bonding projects and a number of other things and shook hands with Representative Swigum and Representative Palente, then Representative Palente, to build up this fund. This handshake was broken. The money was taken. Representative Gunther said he didn't like taking the money and he really didn't want to do it, but now he's taking some more.
Temporarily.
Yeah. We still haven't got back to the four. With this, members, we will, I think, have gotten, of the $49 million the governor took, with this money, we will be back up to counting the money. You're right, $11.5 million last year. We will be to about, what is that, 25, about $36 million back in a fund that we gave up things for three legislative sessions to get $60 million. So I would hope members would oppose the amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. No. Motion does not prevail. We're in recess until 6 p.m. Okay. Let's try the H0797A5 amendment. Whose amendment is that?
A5?
The A5 amendment. I'm sure you guys are keeping score.
A5, yes. Mr. Chair, that would be mine.
Representative Nornes moves the A5 amendment. Kathy should have one of those. Go ahead. Well, it's coming around, Representative Nornes. Why don't you just tell us what it does?
Okay, this amendment addresses an issue that we've discussed a few times already on the committee. And in the bill is a repealer And if you look it up, you'll find that it eliminates the region's candidate advisory council and the process we have used just recently to select region candidates. So I'm proposing that that repealer be repealed.
That we don't repeal the
current
statute.
That's correct.
Members, I think we saw a lot of confusion over the bill as it currently is, or statute. As I said, when we discussed this, you swore to uphold the Constitution. The Constitution says that we have an election for the Board of Regents, and I think the process, when there wasn't these boards where people had to go through, was much more friendly to the people running for the Board of Regents, and that it worked well. And so I would hope that the members would vote it down. Any other discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chair, I would just say I don't think there'd be that many that would agree with you, but the important thing I guess I want to point out is this this change was done in a bipartisan way. It included myself, it included a number of other legislators, and included Senator Pappas. And so this was done jointly. It was done, I think, carefully. And if it's not perfect, I guess then I would suggest that we maybe look for some ways to improve it. I just think it would be a major step backwards if we just junk it.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion does not prevail. Amendment is not adopted. But I'll have a negotiating point now, and I'm sure that Ms.
I didn't get a chance to vote. Can I still vote aye? Very quick on me there, Mr. Chair.
I heard you say that. Okay. The next amendment is the sixth amendment. Whose amendment would that be?
That would be my amendment, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering about the Eveleth Hockey Hall of Fame. I would move the A6 amendment for approval.
Representative Severson moves the A6 amendment. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I might even have been gone when we had the presentation of this bill in the committee. I'm not familiar with it, but my understanding is that this is a 25-cent tax on all Division I hockey teams here in the state for those that are home games. And I think that's five particular colleges: Bemidji, St. Cloud, Minneapolis Duluth, and Mankato.
That would be the correct, my correct interpretation, too.
And Mr. Chair, maybe somebody has the information, but I'm wondering who owns the
This would be my little insertion in the bill.
Does this get a little oink going with it?
A little what?
A little oink?
No, actually, Representative Severson,
the only way we can keep the Hockey Hall of Fame open.
The Hockey Hall of Fame is the national United States Hockey Hall of Fame. Was awarded to the city of Eveleth back in the early 70s. And there's all kinds of museums, including in this bill, there's a state special for the Bell Museum. Now, I know you got a Division I hockey team, but the Eveleth had people in the pros before I think there was a St. Cloud State. And it's a wonderful little facility that doesn't get any state help, and I think it's the only national museum we have in the state of Minnesota, although it could be... Oh, I forgot the Spam Museum in Austin. I'm sorry. But anyway, so we put a little quarter fee on all the Division I hockey because right now we're not getting much help from the Wild that was promised, and the United States Amateur Hockey Association, I believe is the name of it, went through some changes. We used to get help from them. There was an Eveleth person that was out there from Eveleth originally. And so we're looking for a way where the board had closed the museum. People from all over the state and country have come there. And so I thought when people are paying, I don't know, if there's somebody from the U or from the Minsky system, our ticket's about $30 maybe, or I think the Frozen Four was, Mr. Fitzenritter, I don't know, $40. I thought a little quarter to help that. You know, we keep the Children's Museum open with a state special, the zoo, etc. So I'm hoping my members will vote this down, and I'm hoping that everyone on the committee will vote against it.
Yeah, but so, Mr. Chair, how much? What do we have fiscal now? How much revenue this brings in?
I believe the note was. I think we thought if it was last year, it would bring in about $130,000. So I think it's a really good amendment, and it's a wonderful museum. And you know, when this was being offered by the Amateur Hockey Association, they had a different name back in the '70s. They had tried to get New York and Boston and everybody else to get this, and it was awarded to Little Eveleth, Minnesota, because they had more American hockey players in the National Hockey League than any other place in the country, and I believe, in fact, they still do. So with that, members, I'd hope you vote no. Representative Detmer.
Yeah.
You want the Wrestling Hall of Fame to get some...
Mr. Chairman, the Wrestling Hall of Fame is down in Stillwater, Oklahoma, and that is supported by gifts by private people, organizations. But... Now, I'm sure the Hockey Association, Hockey Hall of Fame has a board of directors, correct?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Have they done any type of fundraising to get, this is such a, supposedly a hockey state, have they done any fundraising to get people to support the, being that we got the National Hall of Fame here in Minnesota, why hasn't the state, the people of the state supported it?
Well, there's been support from actually some of the amateur hockey, from amateur hockey in the Twin Cities area. I think, I don't know which arena down here has a, where's the place where Representative Atkins or somebody maybe, do we have any hockey players on here? I wish Senator Thomasoni were here. But anyway, there's a couple places where they have some big tournaments that we've given. We've gotten about $10,000. Last year in the Gopher Stadium bill, there was an appropriation. Iron Range Resource and Rehabilitation Board committed $75,000 a year if it could be matched. The board is made up of people from all over the country, and it's hard to get them together. And they're mainly their concern over the last few years has been more with the enshrinements of the people that get inducted rather than with the museum itself. And so they have tried to spin off the museum, and their efforts, the board's efforts, have been concentrated in other places. So I'd hope you consider this. And
Mr. Chairman, don't get me wrong. I think these National Hall of Fames are important regardless of what sport they are. And if you've been through any of them, I think they're really a neat place to spend some time. And I just know from the Wrestling Hall of Fame that they have a board of directors that raise funds nationwide to support that organization. And I would think that Minnesota could do the same thing nationwide.
Okay, no further discussion.
Mr. Chair, just... Did we see this bill? Was this bill in committee? Was this a bill that was in committee?
I forgot to introduce it, so... I told Representative Gunther I was going to do it, but... okay, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion does not prevail, Amendment.
Ooh.
The A9 Amendment. Who's got...
I have that, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ruth. Operate the A9 Amendment.
And... as that's being distributed.
You guys got a whole grab bag of things over there. That's good.
Yes, we've been busy, Mr. Chair. I'm going to actually just change it verbally, so I'll let everybody get it, but maybe I'll talk about it as we go. I appreciate what Representative Hobbs did with the... putting some money into the GI Bill, and that's what this does as well. And really what it is looking on, I'm going to change it since Representative Hawes had already put some extra into it. We're trying to get closer to the governor's, what the governor had put in. And we know he had $30 million in for the 2 years, and this just has had 14, now we have 20 with Representative Haas' help. So this would be that on page 2, line 4, I would ask that we increase the appropriation for the GI Bill by $4.8 million each year. Total.
Yep. And Representative Ruth, just quickly, could you tell us where that, so we can stay in balance, where the money's coming from?
Absolutely. As soon as I find my sheet. We have, thank you. There's $1 million that's coming from the TEACH program, and that actually is an early childhood program, so we'd like to see that in the early childhood bill. It also eliminates the global market appropriation for $1.5 million. It eliminates the India Center appropriation, $500,000, because we're being very bipartisan, Mr. Chair. It eliminates the River Center debt relief appropriation of $1.8 million, and it transfers in these appropriations. So we want to make sure we have the dollars amount. That's, and so this would be $4.8 million total.
Okay. You've heard the amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. Amendment is not adopted. The next amendment is the A-11. And this is Representative Gunther's amendment. Representative Gunther, well, it's been passed out. Why don't you just explain it?
What is the A-11?
Mr. Chairman, that's a amendment that we had a bill here in this committee about the Board of Boxing, and it appropriates, I believe, $45,000, and it expands the types of fights we're going to have. And if I had a copy of the amendment, I could certainly talk about it with a little more assurance. However, Representative Rocavina, as chairman, kind of told Scott Ledoux that we do this, and I told Scott Ledoux we do this, and I'm going to try to get Scott Ledoux happy.
Okay, this,
he's bigger than you, you know.
He's also mouthier than I am, by the way.
This is a fee increase, so it was what Mr. Ledoux brought up that day, and it doesn't do anything to our budget, so I support the amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. We didn't know at the time what he wanted. The A-12 amendment.
Where's the
A-12? And who would have the A-12 amendment?
We'll bring that up here.
Where is it? Yeah, but where's the amendment? Who's coming?
The A-12 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, the A-12 amendment is an amendment for Brewer County and the Riverbend Business Facilitators Program. It's a business acceleration program. It has been funded by Blueworth County and the state for the last 4 years, and it does a very good job of taking entrepreneurs and taking their ideas and bringing them into fruition and hiring people that pay an average of $16 an hour, and they partner together, the people that are in this program. They help each other, and they have a matrix after they get to point A. It tells them their options, where to go next, so we can get this thing done. We want to expand this program, since it's so successful, into two other areas of the state in southern Minnesota, to see if we can replicate that there, and hopefully if it's successful there, we could even make it go farther. So we're asking for $189,000 each year and to develop the development for grants of up to $6,300 for each of the three sites. They all require a match from the counties, and we hope that it will be successful in other areas as it is in Blue Earth County.
Members, Representative Gunther spoke to me, I think, a while back, and I think I promised him that I would try to do something, and Mr. Berg informs me that I saved exactly $189,000
per year.
What great foresight.
So, I support the motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. None is adopted. We're going to have a group hug when this is
done.
Go ahead. The age 13 amendment. Plumbing board. The age 13 amendment. Representative Mahoney, is this yours?
If it's the 813 amendment?
It is.
It is the 813 amendment, and it is my amendment, Mr.
Go
Chair.
Ahead.
Many people have heard the House File 1208. This is the, we're just putting that particular language, with a few changes, not many, into it, into the omnibus bill. What we did is we took out the, on the boards, we took out the inspectors, we took out the architects and the engineers from any kind of oversight by any of these boards. We put in the electrical board. We put in the reciprocity rules into the omnibus bill. We are putting the apprenticeship board into the omnibus bill. And I think that should be about it, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Everyone has heard this bill many times.
Is there an opinion from the Department of Labor and Industry here? Or not an opinion? No one is coming forward? Is there kind of peace in the valley?
We're getting towards peace in the valley, Mr. Chair. It may take a few more days, but we're moving towards it.
Is there someone coming to testify?
A couple coming down.
Okay. I thought. Okay, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Cindy Farrell. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the department. The department does not support the board composition the way this is drafted. However, we are working with Representative Mahoney on compromise language. The position is not yet supported by the department.
Ms. Lampkin, do you have anything to comment?
No. Just that we've met Representative Mahoney and other representatives of the trades this afternoon. We keep talking on trying to find common ground.
And I'm sure that Representative Mahoney is going to keep working with you. Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, without getting into a lot of detail, what is the main one or two issues that remain unresolved?
One or two? Which section?
The main one.
Ms. Farrell or Ms. Leffing, which one wants to handle it?
Money?
Well, we're still working on the finance, the funding and fees part of the bill. We're working on how the department will support the board with respect to staff and expenses. We're still working on how the enforcement of code and licensing will play out. Those are the primary areas that we'll continue to work on.
Mr. Chair, one
follow-up.
I guess the reason I asked the question is, are there dollar signs attached to some of those things that yet need to be resolved yet?
Ms. Farrell, do you want to take that one?
Mr. Chairman and Representative, the provisions in this bill require the department to transfer funds quarterly to the board to meet their operating expenses. But until the roles of the department versus the board are established, we're not going to. We don't know if that will result in additional costs or not. So the fiscal impact is unknown at this point.
And is there a change in the way that things work now? It's the flow of money, or is it? I understand it's more of a cost for the board, or am I wrong?
Mr. Chairman, if some of the responsibilities are assigned to the board, which would require them to hire staff, that would be a cost. And we're still trying to determine who will be doing what to support these boards.
Okay, Representative Mahoney?
Ms. Farrell, nicely put it in there, put the words out there. We're still working, Mr. Chair, committee members. There is some concerns about the cost of the boards. One side says there isn't, the other side says there is. We're still trying to work towards the center and figure out how the responsibilities of the boards fit into the parameters of what the budget will be in the end. There are some concerns about the fee structure. The electrical inspectors have not had, in the bigger bill, you've still got to work out the actual fees charged, whether they're for licenses or for inspections. That's something that's been worked on all summer. The intent of the offer here is to eventually get to the language that the department had for all the fees. So once we figure out how the rules are made, we'll figure out exactly how the dollar figures will flow, but I don't see them being a substantial dollar figure. We're not that far apart right now.
Representative Bentner.
Just a point of information, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Shouldn't all these things be worked out before they're put within the big bill?
Representative Gunther, do you want, and Narnes, do you want to explain this to the freshman representative next year?
It really doesn't work that way. In a perfect world, it would.
Man of wisdom. All those in favor of the 813 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. He will continue to work with you folks from Dolly. The A15 amendment.
I'm not going to hand this.
Pardon me?
I've attacked the 21st Century Mineral Fund once too much.
So this, you're tabling this one?
Tabling
it. Oh, peace and love. Well, you're going to get a hug from me after.
And there goes the kneecap.
The A16 amendment.
That's much.
Representative Gunther moves the A16 amendment.
I would. Mr. Chairman, the A16 amendment, I think that's one that you have a little something you might want to do later on with. Is that correct? The proposal appears to misunderstood the distinction between the state job service program and the state unemployment insurance program.
Representative Gunther, I'm aware, and I think we have an amendment.
You have an amendment? That's what I was kind of wondering about. I'll hold mine back until we see yours.
Okay. We'll temporarily this amendment over.
There you go.
And in fact, if you want to take it, my amendment.
You want to do yours first?
We'll take it up. And yes, I'm aware of this. We were in the wrong fund here, so I'll move the A24 amendment. And I had to make sure, you know, I was trying to, with the language that's in the bill, I was trying to try to get people to actually work with, more people to work with the laid off worker out there. And, you know, I did meet with some people at Deed, and I appreciated their input, and I didn't need to draft this incorrectly. So I think what this does is at least addresses the concern of which fund that I was attempting to look at, because otherwise I think it would have meant layoffs.
Quite a few, 300 of them.
Right. So let's see, is this drafted the right page going? Okay. So, does the department want to come up and comment on this, or not?
This also is here.
Welcome back to the committee.
Representative Gunther and committee members. I'm Bonnie Alty. I'm the director of the workforce development programs within the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Is this a new amendment, Representative Gunther, that you're...
It's Rukavina.
Yes.
Rukavina, I meant.
Yes.
I need that.
Okay.
one of the things about the workforce centers that I think everybody really truly needs to understand is that 85% of the people that walk into a workforce center are not eligible for any of the specific programs that you allocate money for. They're not eligible for the dislocated worker program. They're not eligible for TANF. They're not eligible for the workforce investment program. In other words, they're your neighbors who are looking for a job, and they're not eligible for anything. And the only dollars that are to serve this population is federal dollars from the FUTA tax that is paid into the Federal Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund, and the money that comes back to the state in two ways. One's for the administration of the UI program, and the other one is for the administration of a labor exchange program, which is called Job Service. These funds have been flat since exactly the same dollar amounts come into Minnesota today as they did in 1982. And so there's been a great reduction in staff from 400 and some in 1982 to 125 right now. What all of our staff, other than maybe about three or four positions, are in the workforce centers. Some of them are to serve business, and some of them are to serve the job seekers. When we started taking our staff out of the workforce centers, they're still in the workforce centers, but they're housed there, but actually calling on business, we actually increased the number of job orders in our system by about 114%, which is significant because it over doubled the number of job openings that when people come into the workforce center, they have something to look at. So we are aggressively getting out and trying to find the job opening so when the job seekers come into the office, they can sign into the job bank and find something. It doesn't do any good to have people walk in the door and have nothing to offer them. That's why we visit businesses. And so limiting our ability to have the number of staff out working with business to find job openings is not helping the job seekers. This amendment asks for 25% of the a maximum of 25% of the staff to be not allowed to go visit businesses. And right now we have about 102 in the workforce centers, and we have about 45 that deal with the business side of it. And they're not only dealing with the business side of it to get the job openings, they're finding out about what's actually happening in the labor market so they have better information when you go back to the talk to the job seeker staff that are working in the workforce centers, that they understand the labor market, they understand what's going on out there. So it's absolutely critical that we have that connection so that we're giving good advice to people when they walk in the door.
Okay. Any further discussion on my amendment? I've corrected what was a wrong statute citation, I guess, on my part. I think you all know what I'm trying to do here, and I would just say that 75%, is that what you said, of the people entering the workforce?
85% of the people that walk into a workforce center are not eligible for any program.
No.
8% are TANF, 4% are dislocated workers, 3% are vocational rehabilitation, and I think there's like 1% are other disability, I mean, like the blind and other different groups, but youth programs from the WIA. But the majority of the people that walk into the workforce center are just the average person looking for work.
And I can help make my point that there's nobody there to help them. And so that's what I'm trying to do, and to concentrate more on that unemployed person. So,
but you can't concentrate on the unemployed person, Representative Rupavina, if you don't have jobs for them. And so that's what we're trying to do, is get people out visiting businesses so that, number one, we know the skills that are required. We can better inform the job seekers what types of skills they need to develop if they don't have them, and then we can also have job openings that they can go out and apply for.
Representative Norris.
Mr. Chair, I guess I wonder why, since there are fewer and fewer of these folks, why we think we know better and how we should tell them how to get their job done. I think that should be up to up to them to decide how best to serve the unemployed and how to pick an arbitrary number or percent. I think I don't understand how you think that works.
Representative Nordis, I don't know about you, but I get a lot of calls from folks that would like to talk to a live human being, and I try to address that issue too. But they go into the workforce centers, and there's hardly, you know, there's nobody there left to help them, and so that's the problem I'm trying to address.
Mr. Chair, I don't necessarily find that true in my workforce center, where I've visited a number of times.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know when we first changed to call centers from having a real person, as you call it, in the office, I got a lot of calls too. And as people got used to making that call to Rochester, Minnesota, where there's quite a few people employed in the call centers, and they got learned how to get service, they learned how to get their unemployment insurance in a very quick way, they got used to it. But there's still some people in my district you got to do a little extra with. And unfortunately, in my district, it's me that's doing it. And I call people at the call center, would you call this person? And take care of their needs, and they usually get done, and they call me back up and say thank you. But there are some people you're never going to make sad, never going to make happy. Might be your best friend. In my case, one of them was.
Ex-best friend.
I hope he's not ex. But I think, by and large, the call centers are doing a good job. They're doing it efficiently. They're doing it with new technology. And I don't know about you, but I don't quite get everything I can do with my computer yet either. And I'm working hard on it. I even researched some material in Illinois State Legislature last week. I was very proud of myself.
Well, can I just remind members that my amendment right here now corrects what's already in the bill, which they really don't like. So,
well,
maybe we should vote on this first and then discuss the bigger picture, because this corrects what they really have a problem with, if I'm not correct.
Well, if you did change that percentage to 25%, you're only adding a few bodies across the state, and you're losing a lot of information about what business needs and what kinds of jobs are out there. And it's still not going to solve the problem of having enough people in the workforce centers to to be able to deal with all those people that walk through the door.
Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Now, Representative Gunther, now you can delete my amendment, because at least what's in the bill is... delete my line.
You made an attempt to go more than halfway, and I think I'll just leave it.
I will work with the Department of Employment and Economic Development to see if we can find something. You know, members, sometimes when you don't have a job or you lost your job,
and it's very upset.
It's nice to talk to a human being instead of look on a computer screen, and you're frustrated enough. Now, I know that there's a lot of this is the fault of the federal government's cuts, and I know that you've struggled to try to replace with technology what you used to have with people, and so I can respect that, and we'll see what we can do. I know that you're concerned about this, and I promise that I will work with you. I'm really kind of a peace in the valley kind of guy.
Thank you, Representative.
Got more sympathetic by the minute. The A18 amendment.
That's not one of my... Yeah, it is too. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to lay that over.
A18 amendment is laid over.
How about the A20?
Which one?
A20.
You skipping 19,
too? I'm skipping 19 also.
Is that yours?
I just want to get done tonight. Time
okay,
to go.
Yeah, that's the best. The A20 amendment. Representative Gunther moves the A20 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, this greatly changes the way we look at unemployment insurance. I'd love to have the expertise of Lee Nelson come up to the table. He's
Mr. Nelson.
Forgotten more about unemployment insurance than the rest of us know.
Mr. Nelson, Welcome again to the committee, Mr. Nelson.
Thanks for bringing me.
Go ahead. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Lee Nelson. I am the Director of Legal Affairs for the Unemployment Insurance Program. Mr. Chairman, what would you like me to say?
That you support what's in the bill.
Just move your
lips. Mr. Nelson, why don't you explain what Representative Gunther is attempting to delete and why?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Gunther is seeking to delete a provision which would mean that if an individual who is requesting unemployment benefits receives a severance of less or $10,000 or less, there would be no delay in unemployment benefits, meaning the first $10,000 of the severance package would not be considered so long as the individual made less than $75,000. Now, I might give you some figures. 9,670 people, or otherwise 76% of individuals who received severance, got less than $10,000. Over 75% of people who received severance, they get less than $10,000 with a lot of individuals. Out of the 12,713 who got severance in 2005 and also requested benefits, over 10,798 receive wages less than $75,000. So most people who receive severance make less than $75,000. You're talking large numbers of individuals. This particular benefit, this particular provision would affect 7,199 individuals that have been in place in 2005. The additional cost and unemployment benefits of this particular provision had been in effect in 2005 would have been $13,056,083. And what it means is an additional $1,499 would have been paid in unemployment benefits for the 7,199 people. We simply feel that, this is a significant cost to the system. It raises the cost on employers, and it raises the cost on employers who, in fact, provided the severance. So you're, in effect, increasing the taxes on the very employers who provided severance pay. To individuals, we feel it will cause employers to be less inclined to provide severance pay, and we should be trying to induce employers to provide severance pay, not penalize employers, nor do we feel that unemployment benefits should be paid to individuals who are, in fact, receiving severance at the same time. Again, receipt of severance does not reduce your unemployment. It simply delays the onset of unemployment benefits. Thank you.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No one knows better than you and your district and your area what long-term layoffs and how painful they are. And this would not lengthen the time that they get benefits. This would shorten the time they would get benefits. So if they got $10,000 worth of benefits, that would keep them going for that much longer with the knowledge that as soon as that money is expended, that they would get benefits for a longer period of time. They're going to get every dime they would have gotten, except they're going to expend their severance pay first and their sick pay. And where I might not necessarily agree with the sick pay as much as I do severance pay, because I think the logical result will be less and fewer and fewer employers. As long as they're going to pay it anyway, they're going to pay less severance pay. And I think we'd be doing employees a great disservice by not accepting this amendment.
Members, we had this discussion at the time I had in Representative Amendment, in Representative Mahoney's unemployment insurance housekeeping bill, I think of $25,000 with no income limit. We've reached some compromises, you heard Mr. Nelson say. At the time, I think Mr. Nelson said it was a $36 million hit. It is now a $13 million hit. Mr. Nelson, how many people that have lost their jobs already at the Ford Motor Company qualify for unemployment compensation? You know?
No, I don't know that number, Mr. Chairman. There are a few. Depends on what package. They were offered 7 different packages. Some of them received up to $140,000 in severance. I know that. Would have been, I say, there were 7 packages. Some of the individuals are, in fact, receiving unemployment benefits currently, if you chose a certain package.
Well, Representative Gunther, let me just quickly say this. This excuses the first thing around. There have been permanently offs at Ainsworth, and all the bad news came after we thought that the Grand Rapids facility was going to open up, and in fact, we were told that just recently by one of the Ainsworth family members, and now they all received a letter that they're not going to. The people up in Cook that were thought they were coming back, that were told that they were coming back, 20 of them approximately were told that, and many of them were longtime employees, that we're not calling you back. There's no union at that plant. We're not calling you back, and you get, Mr. Nelson, help me out, what did they get for each year of service over 3 years? What was it at Ainsworth? Do you remember?
No, I don't.
But it wasn't much. But what happens is whatever they got is spent. They have to spend that. This allows them to keep it. They have to spend it. So it's not that it delays their unemployment. Right now, they have to spend their unemployment or their severance package, and when they spend it, then they get to start collecting unemployment insurance. A lot of the organized unions have negotiated a severance package, and it seems unfair that the negotiation that they did prohibits them, in some cases, from collecting unemployment compensation at all. And in fact, the workforce development, somebody at Deed made a decision that nobody at Ford Motor Company qualified for displaced worker funds, but now they've changed their mind on that. But that's the reason for this. I'm not doing anything radical here. 13 other states have no deductions, and I think there's probably a number that do something like I'm doing. So it's not that I'm breaking new ground or being some kind of a laborist thug that I am, but I'm not doing that here, and I've compromised, and I would hope that we would vote down the Gunther Amendment, and I'll work with Mr. Nelson to see if it can be more palatable to him. All those in favor of the Gunther Amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. No. Motion does not prevail. Amendment is not adopted. The A 21 Amendment. 5 signed zone designation. Whose is that?
That might be mine, sir, but I have to take a look at it first.
Democrats don't get any amendments anymore. Okay. Okay, what does this do? Is page 79, the Commission of Employment Act on Bill must establish a criteria for expanding the zone. Taking credit for the 820. See, they don't, they're like you guys. They just hide them in their pockets until the committee.
I would ask Representative, do you want me to take this one?
You go ahead. I started it in my crayon, and now it's in a type state, so you can do it.
Well, Mr. Chair and committee members,
Representative Mahoney moves the 821 amendment.
I move the 821. I do need to make an oral amendment on line 1.10.
Yep.
Strike and give consideration to the availability of Job Z funding.
So,
can you repeat that?
Yeah, just delete 1.10.
On page 1, line 10, strike that line and give consideration to availability of Job Z funding.
And
Mr. Chair?
Period after corridor, or however you want to do it.
Yes.
Why don't you explain what you're doing here?
Well, Mr. Chair and committee members, last year, we put into law, or the statutes, that the Department of Deed was supposed to set up biozones. And we did it at, rather in the, not the late at night, but kind of last minute, and we tried to get it in, and we didn't do it quite the way it should have been done, and it resulted in about 50 or 60 applications and about 40 places are qualifying for biozones. Biozone is not an advertising or a tool to do economic development with. It's got a different kind of a meaning. And what we're trying to do is get D to take a little bit more time and come up with a better criteria. We had, I can't remember the exact acreage of biozones in the state, but they were starting to approach the Jobs Eve program. That's not quite what we want them to do. We need to be more focused, and rather than have us try to do it here at the legislature, this just directs Steve to come up with the criteria here that Representative Haas and I think Representative Pepin was helping with this.
Quite a
few people helped.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
So anyhow, and Deed was fine with this. They're going to take a work at it. There's one more amendment that's coming that removes the old language. It just got lost at lunch today, unfortunately. So we're going to, Ms. Newman is working on it at the present time. You've got a couple more amendments, and we can do that one a little later. But this one right now will get Deed to start taking a closer look at what kind of criteria we want.
Okay, Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative, does this mean it will include Jobs Eve in its seven-county area then?
No, this strikes the Jobs Eve, taking the Jobs Eve into consideration for a biozone. Because what we're trying to do is not have a Jobs Eve zone right next to a biozone or right in the middle of a Jobs Eve zone.
Thank you.
Okay, any questions? Representative Haas first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Mahoney. I would like to speak in favor of this. The reason that the Jobs Eve zone was in originally was I thought it could be a funding source for a biozone. But in terms of compromise, I took it out, and that doesn't mean in reality that it's gone forever. But this is an opportunity to actually determine what should be in a biozone before the political pressures come to put my town and your town and this town and that town, and then we're going to end up with the little signs that all this is a biozone. Nobody know what it is, but by golly, everybody is one. And, you know, and this is what we want to avoid, is have them establish a criteria of what should be in the biozone. And if you look through the list, and you don't have some of these, you just wonder exactly why you're thinking your community should be a biozone. And now this isn't written in granite, but this is a pretty good list to start with. So you have schools in there, you have transportation, you have health care, you have institutions, you have already established bio businesses and so forth. And that's the type of criteria that should be established before people come in. So if the growth comes, it should come to an established criteria before the political pressure. And I ask you to support this.
Any more questions, Representative Claffey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I just have a question about what will be the benefit of this to the biozone companies that are there? And my second question would be, can a research facility that is not under the University of Minnesota and a nonprofit kind of way be considered within this?
As long as they don't make spam there.
They don't make spam, no, they don't. They
Representative Mahoney.
To answer your second question, mm-hmm. I'm sure I'm leaving it up to Deed. There's no set. I did not give them any instructions. President Haas did not give them any instructions. I think if there is spinoff from a cancer research facility in south central Minnesota, it would fit, and it fit the rest of the criteria that they came up with, I think it'd be a great idea. The benefit to this is, just as Representative Haas talked about, you don't want to have 65 or 100 biozone signs around this state. And Representative Rutkovina has seen in the wisdom to put into his bill, into this bill we're working on, was it $300,000 or $600,000 or
$250,000? Well, excuse me, Mr. Chair, for speaking up. It's two. May I speak? It's $250,000 for the 2-year period.
You already are.
I am, and doing it well. And $250,000 for 2 years for $500,000, and it establishes that it gives the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development the power to market bioscience businesses and business localities, not only outstate but through the countries. And those communities, not many communities, have the ability to market to the world, and it is a really difficult task. And you, as you start picking through that, it really is allowing the state to help out more than one community and also sell more than one community. And we're just doing this over a two-year period, and then I'm going to say, is this something that should go on for a further basis? Because it actually, if it works, it's going to be very important to making the state of Minnesota competitive. If it doesn't work, it's stopped, and you don't have to do it anymore. But marketing bioscience businesses and marketing the businesses from other countries to come to our area is something that we can't do individually, but I think the state could do collectively. And so that's already in there, and I thank you for that wisdom. And I think it matches these other things. So when people are out selling, they say, we have these areas.
Representative Gunther?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mahoney, let's hypothetically use Representative Poppy's town. She, Albert Lee, she works Austin. There. You live in Austin, but you work in Albert Lee, I think, still.
Now I work in Austin. Still. But I used to work
let's
in
go
Albert
back
Lee,
to Albert Lee.
That's my story.
All right. And Albert Lee Mayo is known for an oncology center. In other words, cancer care center. And let's say a bioscience company wanted to take that and spin off on that. Could they establish that type of center in Albert Lee?
Again, if they meet the criteria that DEED is directed by this to come up with, the next amendment takes out the requirement that DEED create biozones. Until we have a set of criteria, there is no sense setting up more biozones. I don't want to do too much, but there's a couple of examples out there that a town, for all intents and purposes, took a Job Z rejection and changed the title at the top of the page to Biozone application and sent it in. And that's what I'm fearful of happening with these particular things, and we need to direct our resources a little bit more focused until our state has got the manufacturing surplus that we can just start. We're trying to find places for them rather than trying to find them to get here.
Great idea.
Okay, you've heard the amendment, and as amended, all those in favor signify by saying aye on the A21 amendment.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted.
We have the A25 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I have that amendment.
Representative Bruce offers the A25 amendment.
And I would request a roll call. I think this is really an important amendment.
And Representative Ruth requests a roll call vote.
Mr. Chair, I think that I think you're going to really like this one because you had a lot of testimony from students and talking about the debt that the students have and the high cost of tuition. And this also can help make our colleges more competitive. We can get the dollars down. What it does is it lowers the student's share by another 0.5%. So the assigned student responsibility, instead of 45.5% of the cost of the institution, would be 45% for the students.
So
it lowers it above to 45%. So it helps the students. It gets it down.
Then what's the actual dollar amount then that?
I think
a half a point is.
Yeah, we could figure it out here. We've got it's about three.
Can you tell me where are you getting the money from?
Right. As it states, Mr. Chair, on page 2, line 15, it adds the dollars there and then removes the dollars on page 12, which is the operations and maintenance. On line 99 of the spreadsheet, it talks about compensation, and I'm not sure if this is in that area, but that's another area that I thought we could be taking it from.
Well, I guess you take all the money from the University of Minnesota, and, you know, I don't know.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Who's? Sorry. Representative Mahoney. You know, you can't rob Peter to pay Paul. And eventually, President Brunick just said this is going to get thrust back on the student. That's why we tried to do what we tried to do. And I did work very hard with the university, and they came along with that scholarship idea and with the other tuition reduction money that I put in there that we'll probably continue to talk about. But what you're doing is just going to shift this right back on the students. So I would hope that we would oppose the motion. I think we've really got a good bill here helping students not only with tuition but with the grant program. So I'd request a no vote.
Well, Mr. Chair, as I say, you could look at line 99 is compensation. It could come there. It could certainly come from another area, but there are a lot of good things in the bill, but I just really think that the students are having a tough time, and so this is one option. If there's another area you would suggest, I'm certainly open to that.
Well, there's a lot of good things in their operation and maintenance budget, you know. Technology, staff, there's the board, health workforce, clinical science initiative, science and engineering initiatives, the Ojibwe language program. So, you know, there's a lot of good things in there, so I would hope a no vote. And we have a roll call. Representative Moe.
Just a quick question, Mr. Chairman. My understanding is if you take some money off the top there, you have to actually take it out of someplace else in the bill, don't you? Then it doesn't add up.
She just did. I just mentioned some of the programs that are going to get cut online on page 12.
But I just wondered, isn't there a specific one that she has to cut to make that budget add up?
She's letting the university decide which one of those programs they would want to cut. Maybe they'd cut the health workforce and clinical science initiative, and we heard how we need healthcare workers in this state. So, Representative Hartman.
Mr. Chair, I think that the reason we're having roll call votes and some of the things we're having roll call votes on is to prepare votes that we are going to see on the TAC literature and campaigns in 2008, and I think it's a shame that we're already starting down this path of trying to create false issues for. Mark my words, we are going to see this type of vote quoted on campaign literature in 2008.
Well, and you know, we're politicians, that's part of the game.
We do.
But, you know, the fact of the matter is, again, members, this bill is one of the, we have $390 million more money in higher education, and that hasn't happened for a long time around here. And I'm grateful to our leadership that they gave us this kind of money to work with on this committee. And I think the students are happy and the faculty's happy, and I think the private not-for-profits are happy, and I think even the Office of Higher Education isn't that unhappy. So, you know, I think we've done a good job, and so I hope we vote down this amendment. And we're not innocent when it comes to playing politics either. We did the same thing in the minority. We understand what's going on. So, Representative Detmer.
Mr. Chair, we're just happy, happy, joy, joy.
I but, know. I'm going to give you a hug after this. If we get done in the next half hour, it's going to take till midnight to get out of here.
I'll show you some wrestling moves.
I'll
wrap it.
Just wanted to know, just to respond, how many roll call votes have we had in this committee?
I think three earlier, didn't he? This might be the fourth or the third.
Yeah, I don't think that's an issue here.
Okay, clerk will take the roll.
Rucadina.
No.
Atkins.
No.
Bly.
No.
Greiner.
No.
Clark.
No.
Detmer.
Yes.
Eastland.
Yes.
Gunther.
Yes.
Todd.
No.
Portman.
No.
Mahoney.
No.
McFarland.
Yes.
Moe.
No.
Nornis.
Yes.
Norton. Poppy.
No.
Ruth.
Yes.
Severson.
Yes.
Slocum.
No.
Welty.
No.
There being 13 nays and 7 ayes, the motion does not prevail. The next amendment is the A26 amendment. The A26 amendment?
I'm done with amendments, Mr. Chairman. Table it. My
26? The A26 amendment. It says page 71, line 32. Maybe it's mine. It's giving me 50 grand more than 20%. Oh, that's you?
Yeah, I was trying to be nice to you, but...
Okay.
Oh, yeah, right.
That's table. Okay, so now we have the A27 amendment. The A27 amendment. Page 73. It starts off page 73. No one wants to claim credit for that. Line 2. Oh, maybe it is mine. This language here, I know what this is now. Representative Greiling had talked to me about this, and I had inadvertently left it out. We gave money to the extended employment base, and Representative Greiner had a bill on this, the governor had a bill on this, and what this does is that $250,000 is the supplement funds paid for wage incentives. She, Representative Greiling, has a concern that we should, reward an incentive for those folks that keep these hard-to-employ people working for, is it a longer period of time? It refers to in those rules there. So that's what it does. It rewards the employers that keep these hard-to-employ folks in this program working for in the rules, it's like 6 months or more.
Which program?
Because it's the extended employment services for people with disabilities, and it gives a reward to those that, because these people, they get employed, they drop off, but some people are doing a very good job of it. And so that's kind of an incentive to these employers, for these hard-to-employ folks. And Representative Greiling had it in another bill, I believe, somewhere, and she had talked to me about it, and I had told her we'd put it in the bill. I think it's a really good idea, and it never got in the bill. I overlooked it and forgot about it. My staff has been very good at keeping me focused, but they've been working so hard that sometimes I space things out.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's macro.
Would you like to speak to it? Come on.
I'm Lynn Osterman, and I represent MACRL, the Association of Community Rehab Organizations. I guess, Mr. Chair, we were quickly trying to clarify what exactly this amendment would do to the current recommendations that you have before the committee in terms of the fiscal recommendations that you were planning to pull forward. Representative Brainerd had carried our bill on behalf of Mackerel. The original request was for $2.25 million for the biennium, and your recommendation currently is $2 million, and we're grateful for that. We are hoping, quite frankly, Mr. Chair, not to tie the hands of the department with regard to how they would administer those dollars. The organization that I represent is on record opposing the language that was in Representative Greiling's bill. And so I'm a little worried that if what this would say, in fact, would be additional dollars, we wouldn't oppose it. But if it would take the dollars that you've already allocated in your recommendations and tie them up in a certain way, we would oppose that.
Members, well, thank you for, I did give $1 million more, I believe, than the governor recommended, and this $250 would be included in that.
Okay.
But if you have some problems with it, and we can talk to Representative Greiling, I hope that we can put this on the scene. Representative Booth.
Well, Mr. Chair, it says each year, so it's actually $500,000.
Well, I can eliminate the each year, I guess, as a start. Because even, I, the $1 million is extra. I would just incorporate the, or move to... delete the each year of this $250,000 supplement, it would imply that it's just that amount of money then. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, with all due respect, could I make just a suggestion then? The cost of living adjustment that we were hoping to have as a result of that additional million, in other words, the $500,000 each year above the governor's recommended base change, $330,000 of that each year, a little more in the second year because we would base it on a 3% increase. About $330,000 of that was intended for a COLA. Could we possibly change this to $220,000 that would be utilized that way? I think that would be a compromise that my client would appreciate the opportunity to negotiate.
Well, we can work on that.
Okay.
Okay, I'll move the 27 amendment as amended with that deletion of each year. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. The A. The A22 amendment, Representative Clark, is your amendment. Go ahead. I'll get this out to everybody.
This is just correcting an inadvertent error in the endorsement that was used of the bill that deals with employees. The whistleblower part of the bill that we already passed. Everybody had agreed to everything, and this amendment puts back in language that was inadvertently left out when the amendment was presented earlier today. So I want to make sure that it's in there.
Yes, it's here.
Yep, it's A22.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I'd move A22. Just an oversight by the... And thank goodness the advocates caught it and fixed it up.
All righty. Any questions on that? Any comments from... Would it be Dolly? Department of Labor?
Yes, it's the Department of Labor, and I was working with the business community. This is something we had agreed upon. It basically, if you need me to go through, I mean, to basically make sure that we're talking about public employees, not private employees. That was one of the agreements that we had reached earlier.
Okay, so it's clarification that your amendment from this afternoon is just for public employees.
Yes, it was. That's the way it passed the committee. There was no controversy about it. And when it was put in the packet for today, inadvertently it had not reflected the final amendment that was put on when it came through the Commerce Committee.
Questions to the amendment? Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. The A29 amendment is another amendment dealing with biotechnology. Whose would that be?
Mr. Chair, I think that... is that a two-page?
Two-page amendment.
I choose not to offer that at this time, Mr. Chair.
Okay, that's Scott.
the A23 amendment.
Mr. Chair, that's my amendment.
Professor Mahoney offers the A23 amendment.
This is the Eastland Mahoney amendment. This should address the concerns that Representative Eastland brought to the discussion yesterday and today when we adopted, we folded Representative Melton's bill into the omnibus bill. It says if an individual simultaneously applies for both an independent contractor's exemption certificate and also has a license under Section 326.98, that they are exempt. So, everyone should be happy with this. It covers the second license and not having to get a second license.
Any questions on that? This was what Representative Eastland had requested to clarify that bill the other day. Representative Eastland.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, I know I saw this yesterday when Representative Nelson, and what he said at the time was the $100 was just kind of stuck in there as kind of a, and I guess what I, could that be reduced a little bit, do you think?
I don't know that it can, but I'm sure it's, you could talk with Representative Nelson, and we're not done until they bang the gavel in the big house.
Okay.
Ms. Leffink, did you hear that question from Representative Easton? Could you come down? Is this a fee that, this relates to the new fee, right? So. The question was, could it be?
The question was, is the $100 that's on here? In my conversation with Representative Nelson, he said that was just kind of a number that kind of got plugged in there unscientifically, and I guess the question is it necessary for that number to be that high?
I don't know. Ms. Lecton?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Senator Eastland, I discussed this amendment with our financial director. She felt that combining them, that the appropriate amount then would be $100 for purposes of cost doing, because part of what this fee covers is not the application process, but part of what the fee covers is the enforcement activity that the agency will be engaging in to ensure compliance with the law, and so therefore the $100 is not mean there'll be two parts to how this law works. One will be a review of the application to and documentation provided by the applicant to be confident that they do meet the independent contractor requirements. But the other part of what this legislation does is it provides for enforcement authority for the department to when issues come up regarding that person status, the last section of the bill, and so this fee is for that purpose also. Yeah. And so consequently, I was advised by our financial director that the $50 reduction would go towards the processing of the application, which was what we were looking for some efficiencies in, but the remainder was for the other expectations of the department in terms of its enforcement responsibility. I have to say that this is an unknown number, really, as to how many true independent contractors there are in the state. Certainly, if adjustments are needed because of things going one way or the other, the department will clearly look at making adjustments in the fee that's charged.
Yeah, I can work with Representative Nelson.
Keep in mind, too, that I don't know what the fee is under Statute 326.98 right now, but this is a key. This is the license for that and the new application. So, Representative Mahoney. Yeah,
Mr. Chair and members, let me clarify. Let me clarify here. This amendment, as I understand it, if I'm applying for a independent contractor exemption certification, and I already have a general contractor's license, or I'm applying for one at the same time, the application fee for the independent contractor exemption certification shall be reduced to $100. So with this amendment, you easily could have two licenses that you have to carry, and you would have to pay two fees. They just reduce the fee if you already have a, if you have or are applying for a second license, you know, a general contractor's license at the same time, so that you could be a general contractor, go out and bid on doing that finishing work that you were talking about yesterday. And if you're hired by a, if you're going out as an independent contractor to do whatever else that you might do, I mean, I don't know whether you need a license for digging a ditch or putting a roof on or whatever, but you'd have to pay it. It's just reducing it. The independent contractor exemption certificate.
And Mr. Chair, I understand that. All I'm saying is it's reducing it by $50 is what it's
doing.
And I guess I still have some concern about the fact that we just keep licensing and relicensing people, and they keep buying licenses that really, in their mind, are doing the same thing. And I think that's kind of a frustration, and it's kind of the government bureaucracy bearing down on people. So I'll talk with Representative Nelson some more about it. Mm-hmm. And it's getting at the issue.
Okay, we've got the M in front of us. Representative McFarland.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, do we know approximately how many people this might affect? And if so, does it affect our fiscal note on this?
No, it's the fee, so it doesn't affect.
Oh, yes. I don't think it does, but I think that was a question that was asked yesterday, and I will see if Ms. Lepik would know.
The number
with
first?
Chairman Rukavina, Representative Mahoney, the reduction by $50.
How many people do we know are going to be applying for this, do you think? You gave an estimate yesterday, I believe.
I believe the fiscal note estimate was 12,000 people. But my point was, if we're going to, how many people do you think will be able to qualify for this 100 fee versus the 150? Will that affect the fiscal note? Chairman Rukavina, Representative, I don't believe that's why we did it the way we did, because we felt that the $50 would be the part of the cost of the fee that would be associated to with evaluating the application, and because we would be very similar information but not identical information is provided by an individual when they seek licensure as a residential building contractor, that consequently, you know, this is all estimates, that we felt that we could reduce the amount by $50.
Okay. Representative McFarland, you probably bring up a good point, because we've booked the money coming in and now it's a little to reduction, so we'll have to look at it. But let's pass it out now. Representative Easton wanted it, then we'll see what kind of numbers we get from Dolly on what we should start doing. Okay, all those in favor, signify by Ms. Hain.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. I don't know if there's any other amendments, or are there?
Mr. Chair, I have an amendment.
Well, something about a cancer center in southwest Minnesota?
Representative Poppy offers the... What number?
It's 070640.
Representative Poppy offers the following amendment. The 0640 amendment.
He kind of hid this over here so that you wouldn't be alarmed, Chair Rukavina, but I just wanted to address the Packing House Workers Bill of Rights a little bit. This is something that's in, the language is in this bill, and I am someone who does support the workers' rights and certainly would support safety for those workers and be concerned about that. I do have this amendment that would change somewhat the language. This is not something, I know Representative Hansen has brought this bill forward, and this is not the, you know, this is not the preferred language that he would want to see move out of this committee, but it's a maybe more compromised language, and it is something that does address some of what the concerns are. And I represent an area that includes Hormel Foods, and they have been and continue to be an industry leader when it comes to worker safety, plant safety, and food safety. And that's due to the good work that they have and all of the good workers that they have. And they certainly have a good relationship and understand that. The workforce is changing somewhat. We do have new people coming in, not like the long-term people that lived and breathed and worked in the plants for years and years. And so I know that there is some need to be able to have a Workers' Bill of Rights, but this is an attempt to probably make it a little less controversial as it leaves here. So I just, I know that you may have some concerns about it. And I think that it was drafted incorrectly. It's not page 108. It is...
Well, I don't think you deleted my language.
I guess that's what they didn't do. They didn't delete page 91, line starting at line 24. Delete section 15. It was misdrafted. So I was going to put this in, and we don't need to just put this in. It was to delete what's there and to replace it.
I would oppose the amendment, and that's all I'll say about it. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. Motion does not prevail. Amendment is not adopted. Do we have any other surprise amendments here this evening?
Thanks for not yelling at me.
That's okay.
Not yet, anyhow.
Is there anyone in the audience that the representative that would like to talk to the bill after I have one, after we hear, then we'll just have comments from
Mr. Chair, can
these committee. Representative Poppy.
I could amend that language a little bit in the Packing House Bill of Rights.
Hey, you got an election certificate. Let me see what you're doing here.
Mr. Chair, could I bring up my bioscience zone amendment again?
No.
I'm aware that this language is acceptable to Representative Hansen, and perhaps would be acceptable to you as well. But it goes back to on page 91.
Yes.
And it's to change the number of employees to be 25 or more full-time employees, and also then there's a civil action piece of information on page 92 and at the top of 93, and it would be to delete that. Right. Oh. Actually, I'll just need to address this a little bit differently.
I don't think...
Because it's on page 90, on page 91, we're going to, on line 26, insert full-time after more. And on page 92, actually we need to change this, page 92, line 33, delete subdivision 5.
Representative Poppy, I would suggest...
Mr. Chair, I think Representative Poppy has got... I think what you're trying to do is delete subdivision 5 on page 92, lot 23... Did you change 30. Your amendment?
Mm-hmm.
He did.
Okay.
Thank you.
Is there anybody that wants to testify on this amendment? Because I don't know if I support
Other than
it.
Me no. saying no?
I just don't support it at this time. And I'd ask the committee to vote it no, and I think you might want to work with Representative Hansen before
made it tomorrow before we get to Representative Murphy's committee on Friday. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion is not carried. Then it's not adopted. Anyone in the audience, is there anyone who cares to testify on the bill?
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
If I could just speak to one portion of the bill. On page 99, I know there was a previous section that we were speaking to a little bit under the same type of restructuring, that at least 75% of the employee compensation paid from the accounts under this fund must be used in a workforce and disseminating people out into the particular areas to get them disseminated. I'm wondering what kind of effect that has on the unemployment, the main unemployment office where most of these employees are currently situated.
We changed that with that amendment.
Okay, that's what I wanted to double check. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other comments on the bill? Listen, I want to
say this is a great bill, Mr. Chair, and I'm appreciative of you.
I really, want to thank our staff, and in fact, we should give all the staff, including the pages, a round of applause. And I really want to thank the students and the everyone I got input on. Somebody want to talk? Is there anybody else that wants to talk on the bill in the audience? Ms. Keeger. Pretty good bill, isn't it?
Good chair. Well.
Were you referring to my head or what?
Mr. Chair and members, there are some really good things in this bill, and I want to thank you and your staff in particular, and I know that you put in some very, very long hours, and I want you to know how appreciative we are of that. There are also some things that concern us and concern the governor, and so I am testifying on the governor's behalf as well as on behalf of our agency. Just quickly, a couple things. On the Achieve bill, I think we're pleased that at least we look at this as sort of a placeholder in the bill. I think this is an important initiative for the governor, and that this will be something that he'll continue to pursue as we move through the balance of the session. But I think he'd like to see a more substantial program that would help our students get better prepared for college. The GI Bill, we're really pleased that you were willing to come up a little bit on the money. We still are sort of struggling with how we're going to be able to, do we prorate the amount that the soldier gets when they come back here? Do we cut the money off? You know, that's not something that we really want to do, so we'd like to continue to work as we approach conference committee, et cetera, to try to figure out how to make sure that we award the GI money in a fair way for veterans. On terms of the grant program, we're very, very pleased with your recommendation on the grant program. Thank you. The $12 million additional new money is a wonderful thing, and that hasn't happened in quite some time. Obviously, there's some things that we agree with in terms of how you divvied up the money. We depart in some others. One area of concern, though, I've mentioned to you is the cap on the two-year schools. We testified on this last year, and I will testify on it again. I think the intended consequence is to try to affect the cost for the for-profit. But the unintended consequence, I think, we're still running the numbers at our agency, is that I think some of the nonprofit schools get looped in, and the for-profits are hit very, very hard. If the goal is to try to, as you now have with the four-year cap, tie it to the highest cost public, and the goal is now to try to tie this to the highest cost two-year school, I guess we'd encourage a phased-in approach or a freeze or something that doesn't affect these students so dramatically, and we'll share those runs with you as soon as we're finished with them, but there are some significant impacts for students. We're also pleased. I think that you did a good job in terms of the MNSCU and the U appropriations. I think the governor had some interest in trying to target some of that money. You did that in the bill. The spending is, of course, higher than he'd recommended, and I think his concern, of course, is making sure that you're approaching, you're focusing the money and trying to be strategic, keep the place running, but also try to buy tuition down to some extent to help those students. The question is, are these increases sustainable over the long term in light of the changing demographics in our state? I know he'll have some concerns about the MNSCU board composition. I've talked with you about that before, just adding the two labor folks on the board. You know, when we begin specifying seats for people, that does raise some concerns and questions. I think we're very pleased about the money for the Bioscience Partnership. That was a really good addition. And there are a number of other things, but finally I did want to remind you, I think Representative Nornes reminded you earlier this today, that the governor's position on the DREAM Act, he has said that he would veto a bill that has the DREAM Act in it, and he has said that last year as well, so he does have a fairly firm position on that. Mr. Chair, thank you very much. Did you want to add anything?
Well, thank you too for at least saying it's a pretty good bill. And, you know, the ACHIEVE program we did put, we've got some concerns. It's changed dramatically. The acronym's changed even by the governor. And did you like our cute little acronym?
Mr. Chair, it was cute. I noticed that you changed it a bit.
He changed it twice, so I figured the governor's going to use it too. But, you know, when Mr. Michikanis helped explain the bill with Representative Nornes the other night, that there were the concerns about the delivery and how that would work in rural Minnesota, especially, and in some of the inner ring suburbs and Minneapolis and St. Paul and other places where declining enrollment has basically eliminated all the what we used to call gifted, you know, programs in our communities. And so we've got some concerns with that. You asked me and the governor asked me to put some of his stuff in here, and I put a lot of his stuff in here, and I put the ACHIEVE in there, as you said, as a place where I think I've done much better than the Senate did. We've got some concerns about it. The grants, you know, the grants, Mr. Yard. We have to do something about that. I don't think that the students at the two-year private for profits. I think when you do your runs and you look at what we've done in the grant program itself and how that will affect what you're concerned about, we may see that we're not hurting these students at all. But, you know, our public institutions, and it's the job of this state to provide a public education. K-12 is in our Constitution. The higher education is our responsibility. And our public institutions do a wonderful job, and they do it for a lot less for the enrollment costs than a lot of these private for-profits are. And we have to pay our employees there. Most of them are unionized, if I'm not mistaken. Whether it's the janitor or the professor, they get paid a decent wage. They get decent benefits. I can tell you, and I could probably, without... Maybe there are some exceptions, but I'm sure the salaries and the benefits and that aren't the same. You know, people are making money. They're stockholders. And it comes to a point where you have to look at, do the stockholders deserve to get more of the state grant money than a lot of our students? So, you know, it's something we've got to look at. We have a cap on the four-year that's tied to the University of Minnesota, and it makes sense to have a cap for the 2 years that's tied to our public institutions also. And I promise you I'll work with you, and you know, when we look at that, it's going to mean that there's less money in that pot at the state grant program, because that's where we got a chunk of money. So if we can reach some kind of a compromise, I'm more than willing to do that. Maybe we have to carve out a few of the not-for-profit 2 years that may be affected by this. But the bottom line is, you know, at what point do you let people keep making money off our education system? So,
Mr. Chair, to your first point on ACHIEVE, we agree that access is there are huge disparities and discrepancies across the state. So I'd like to commit to you that we'll continue to work on trying to figure out a way to address that much better for the program. We've also talked with the K-12 folks, Department of Education, about that as well, how to better address those discrepancies across the state, in urban and in greater Minnesota. So the second point, I think Mr. Michikanis has something he'd like to say.
Mr. Chair, we are working through this still, but I know the arrow you were shooting, but you might have hit the wrong target, in part because a lot of these for-profit are small businesses. About half of them are family-held. They're not corporately held. And the ones that are corporately held, I think under the bill, students at those schools actually get more money than less. So it's not quite certain if you kind of hit the target that we're aiming for. And I think as we work through the analysis, we're sure that we're going
to. And we'd like to work with you, Mr. Chair, to try to.
And finally, you know, I'm not going to debate the DREAM Act here tonight, but, you know, Governor Pawlenty is the son of immigrants, too. He used to talk about that community, your grandson, I should say. Maybe he's the great-grandson. I don't know if he's on the end of the one generation or the beginning of the next. But he used to talk about it a lot. And, you know, we're just trying to give people the same opportunities that he had. And we can get into the debate about whether legal and illegal and whatever. That's a debate, I guess, for another day. But I'm more than willing to talk to the governor about his opposition to this and my support for it. So maybe I can get him to come around to my line of thinking, reminding him of his Polish roots and his wife, Mary, who I really think is a great lady, her Finnish roots. So with that, if there are any questions.
Thank you.
For the witnesses, and if there's nobody else in the audience. Oh, there is somebody else in the audience. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Rukavina, members. I am Jeannie Herman with the Minnesota Career College Association. I'll be brief because I know it's getting late. I wanted to, first of all, thank you. I think the increase to the four-year cap will be helpful to many students, and there are many students who are grateful for that. I do ask that you consider those students that are in two-year programs. They're typically your needier student. There's people who need to get in college and get out of college quickly to get in the workforce because they have a great need for some financial improvement in their lives. So as we move forward, we'd like to continue to work with the committee as well as the Office of Higher Ed to ensure that those needy students aren't dramatically hit. I can give you a quick example, and a student who would be neediest, having the lowest ability of family contribution, looks to take a $780 hit that would have been grant dollars before that will now have to go to loan dollars for them. So increasing their loan indebtedness, I don't think is the right goal. So, again, we hope to continue to work with you and hope that we continue to consider these two-year students.
Ms. Herman, as we get the numbers from MINSU and look at what they're talking about, we'll see what we can do. Excuse me, from the Office of Higher Education. Sorry. Sometimes you all look alike back there. So.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much.
But we will, okay. Any other comments, members? Thank you all for being so cooperative on the committee. Representative Hartman.
Well, just now that I have my spreadsheets, I think I can tell you that the Apple is a thank you for about $100 million in help for students to keep tuition down and help them afford college. So, sorry I didn't have my spreadsheets before, but $100 million is pretty good work for the students.
You know, when somebody gets, in the old days, got an apple in Italy from somebody, they have the person that gave it to you a bite first. So, do you want to do that? Any other? Anything else? We'll be in the front of the, this bill will be in front of the, I believe on Friday, with at 12:30 in front of Representative Murphy's committee. With that, members and everyone, meeting adjourned. Thank you.